Okay, welcome back. Thank you. We're now back in open session. I want to either remind people if you already read this or let you know, this is the first night that we're actually live streaming with video, and it's actually the fixed camera, the way to it, up in the corner there. So it doesn't really pan or scan, but it does. It's fixed in this particular area, but I just want you to be aware. And if you'll be participating in public comment, that's just to, again, your voice is to be picked up along our microphones as well.
Yeah. I'd ask that Stephanie too.
I wanted to thank Stephanie because she was the contact for this.
Larry Chain from Access Communications, who donated the camera for us. I want to thank him for doing that.
Is Larry here?
Great asset.
Oh.
Everything he did.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Stephanie. Yeah.
All right, so just that reminder or message. Public participation. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form, which is in the entrance, and limit your comments to 3 minutes. If your comments have substantially been reflected in other comments, we'd ask, in the interest of time, that you please forego making them, provide the board with any copies of written material that you may have, either tonight or via email. Personal complaints and criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, interruption, and/or interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate D41 staff representative for a response, if a response is warranted. Is there anyone present that would like to address the board at this time?
Jeff Cooper?
Mr. Cooper?
Thank you. Jeff Cooper from Glenellen. I've got a couple of things on my plate tonight. I've got kind of a dilemma on my first item here because I just seem to go back and forth and seem to talk to myself. I have been trying to get a straight answer from the board president on how we're paying that one assistant principal's position from, that came back in June of 2013. And for 2 years now, although it was supposed to be coming from a deduction in the budget, for 2 years now, it's been coming out of pockets that we apparently have these big pockets and tons of money sitting in them. And they've been able to pay, the administration has been able to pay this position from some pocket from the previous budget. So I asked during the budget hearing a couple weeks ago, what's going to go on this year? I didn't get a response at all, nothing. So after several days, I emailed the board president and, trying to get a response and got nowhere. And then I tried, I came Thursday night to their semi-open, semi-closed meeting they had, a special meeting. And thought I made a point at that meeting and thought I'd get a response, but I didn't get anything. So here I am again, and I guess this time I will ask the whole board. I can't get a response as to where we're paying this assistant principal's position from. I know back in June of 2013, it was said specifically how it was going to be funded so that it would not cost the taxpayers a penalty. That's not been what's happening. I just want a straight answer. So that's the first thing on my agenda, or my agenda, my plate. Second thing is on this TRS business that we're talking about in the Finance Committee meeting. So tonight's the second time it's been spoken about, what we're trying to do for those who weren't privy before. We have a number of administration, all the principals, assistant principals, and most of the full-time administration staff, that the taxpayers are paying the employees part of their TRS, which to me would be like Social Security. So as an employer, we pay for their stuff, but as the employee, they should be paying the other half, and we pay it. Why? Because we've not been paying attention for years. It's been a long time that this has been going on. Does that make it right? No, it's not right. It should stop.
About 20 seconds left.
Okay, there's a plan. I've been told possibly to go ahead and, over several years, phase that out. But what we're talking about tonight and last time in finance, what they're talking about is to compare us to many other districts and to see what they do. And it doesn't matter. We're the taxpayers of District 41. And we are what counts in this district. It doesn't matter what they do in some other town. They should listen to us, and they should act on our desires. It's that simple. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper.
Jennifer Rapp.
Actually, Nancy, if I can, I do want to respond to Mr. Cooper. Thank you, Jennifer. Appreciate it. I do want to follow up. Mr. Cooper has, as he said, asked for information about the reassignment of two assistant principal positions. Actually, last Saturday, August 15th, I did respond to Mr. Cooper to his email of the Thursday afternoon before. I, in fact, was out east. My daughter's moved to take her first job, so I was out east helping her do that. So on Saturday, I did respond, and I will read to you my response. Thank you for your email. In May 2013, the board took action to approve the reinstatement of two assistant principal roles, one through the reassignment of the assistant director of special education to an assistant principal role, and a second assistant principal role was reinstated. And just for context, the two AP positions were reduced in the budget in 2010 as a result of wanting to pull back on administrative costs. So there was a three-year period where the AP positions had been reduced to two. The assistant director position was eliminated once the assistant principals were reinstated. The second reinstated position was funded within the year's budget, 2013-14. The term used at the time, zero-sum gain, was used to reflect that there was no increase to the budget to pay for the reinstated position. It was the board's interest to not increase the budget in order to fund the second assistant principal position, which had been asked by the administration at the time to be filled. So I just wanted to be able to read that into the record and to thank Mr. Cooper let him know that I did want to respond and wanted to make sure that I read that into the record as well. So thank you.
I wonder, Eric, I just had a question for that. I was sitting out with Mr. Cooper's at. I'm still kind of confused when we brought it up at budget time. What was cut? I mean, what was on that second one? What was actually cut? I mean, was the budget actually reduced, or what was cut to offset that? What was the offset? I guess that's where I'm speaking for Mr. Cooper, but I think that's what he's looking for.
Mm-hmm. The offset was a line item in the budget that the district has as a contingency, I would call it, in terms of positions that are needed. For instance, Forest Glen, I think it was probably 3 or 4 years ago, we had a blip, it could have been further back, where we had a higher number of kindergartners come in, and so there needed to be a position hired literally the week before school. And so there's a salary line item used in order to offset those positions. So it's not new dollars, but it's money that's set aside in order for a position that's necessary, needed. In this case, the board at the time felt that there was need for the two AP positions, in large part because of PARA, which was the state-mandated evaluation program, which increased the amount of time that principals and assistant principals had to be observing. I think we were told it was like 135 hours, so it was a huge increase. So that was, as I recollect the conversation, and we're sitting in on it, was the intention behind it, to make sure new money did not have to be added to the budget. There's no increase to the budget in order to do it.
I'm wondering if Mr. Cicerella at some point maybe could show the line item, you know, to Mr. Cooper. Show them where that actually transacted.
Well, I think there's been conversations. I know there's been conversations over the last 2 and 3 years with Mr. Cooper too. So, but happy to in Bob's last few days we'll talk about that. Paul,
just a clarifying question.
Yeah.
When you talk about the budget, do you recall in what whose budget that was in? Was that in?
That's all under human resources.
Was that Lori's? I think it was. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it was Lori's budget, mm-hmm. in on a specific line item.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. But thank you. Thanks. And we'll do that. We'll ask.
I think we've done that before.
Yeah, we have. We'll pull that out. All right. Thank you. Mrs. Rath.
I'm up here today because
because I'm very concerned about the elementary school schedule as it's been presented for this school year. My concerns are twofold. One, the block schedule for PLC seems to be driving the instruction. Two, the handouts given to parents last March when the extended school day was passed seems disingenuous at best. First of all, the block scheduling is not what is best for elementary age kids. Integrating within the traditional classroom has proven more effective than isolated instruction from content area specialists. PBL, for example, would be far more effective in an integrated traditional classroom. Yet more blocks have been added this year. Digital media and world cultures for level 3 students have been added so that the students have somewhere to go during their teacher's PLC time. Digital media can be easily integrated into the core subjects, and in fact, the Common Core claims that it should be. World cultures does not tie in with the Common Core. At the last BOE meeting, Eric Carlson said that the kids needed somewhere to go so that the teachers could have their PLC time. While I realize PLCs are important, research varies on the amount of PLC time a teacher needs to teach and lead effectively. No community in the area, and I called around to 89 Lombard and where I work in Maine, had their teachers meet 45 minutes per day for 5 days a week. Secondly, I have two documents in my hand, both found on your website. The first is a handout entitled Benefits of Proposed Changes to the Allocation of Time in the Elementary Level to Parents from your March 9, 2015 meeting. In it, the sample schedule lists the elementary lunch to be 55 minutes in length for the 2015-16 school year, recess and lunch combined. My other document is the Memorandum of Understanding between the BOE and GIA, also dated March 9th, same date. The GIA contract lists lunch as 45 minutes. Why is there a discrepancy of 10 minutes?
About a minute, Jennifer, just another minute.
The transition time between classes and lunches is also discrepant. I would ask the board to compare both of these documents, and I wonder if the parent handout is a disingenuous attempt to sell the communities on a longer school day. The shorter lunch recess and increased transition times were not advertised in the parent handout. Also, why do they have these students get a longer lunch than elementary students? On the flip side of this, why are first, second, and third graders getting FLES instruction, but Spanish is not available for my sixth grader? I also have serious concerns about the elementary AP schedule for their specialist classes. It is not educationally sound practice and makes teaching more difficult for those all-important PE, art, and music teachers. Again, going back to Harley, the AP schedule there was discontinued a couple of years ago. Why has it been adopted for the elementary school? Finally, on another topic.
About 10 seconds.
I heard the presentation about STEM scopes at the last BOE meeting. I just haven't finished this paragraph.
Sure.
This was very interesting to me as the district just purchased a science program last year. Which one are the teachers supposed to use? I would ask that you slow down and pilot STEM scopes and some other series to find a best match for our teachers and learners. I know it was said at the last board meeting that districts are moving away from piloting new curriculum, but that is simply not true. In Wheaton, Lombard, and 89. For example, Wheaton is currently piloting by comparing two new science programs. With all of the changes on the plate for our fabulous teachers, why not slow it down a bit and let them digest the series you purchased last year?
Thank you.
Yeah. And I'm not going to be rude, but I have to go to the
conference. Sure. Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Atherton.
Mr. Curry.
Good evening.
I'd like to follow up on Mrs. Rapp's STEM scope. Again, you guys know me. I'm a third grade bilingual teacher in Joliet, and I've seen many computer programs come and go, and they don't seem to be always evaluated. I think one of the things that, for example, we have this great program that helped my kids with their fluency. And I used it for 3 years straight, and then all of a sudden, I asked them the next year, and it was gone. If you had asked me whether I needed that program or not, as a teacher, I would have said, it's essential. I really, really need that program. Okay? So what I'm asking for with STEAM Scope is that Mrs. Carlson come up with a way to analyze or survey the teachers to see if STEAMScope is passed or STEMScope is passed, to analyze and survey this purchase. It's a $25,000 purchase per year that over 10 years could be $250,000, because I think it's about, well, maybe not, it may be 16 or 18 a year after that, so I'm a little off on the numbers. But I feel that in education, a lot of programs come, get thrown at teachers, but there's no back-end analysis. There's about, at my school district, there's about 10 programs I don't care to use, or they're not age-appropriate for my children, for my students. But there are some that I would never want to get rid of. I would ask that the district start looking at that. Also, training in the middle of the year as a teacher in October is hard. I would encourage you to maybe train in October, but not purchase the licenses until the summer. It takes teachers have planned over the summer for their current school year. And when you hit them in the middle of the year with something brand new and you say you have to integrate it by, you know, November, it puts them under a lot of pressure that I think with proper planning and thought wouldn't be as rushed and would be more effective. Instead of forcing it upon them, they would have time to digest it and integrate it into their program.
About 10 seconds?
Yeah. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. And just to follow up on that, under the superintendent's recommendations, which is after our consent agenda, we will be talking about that in some depth. So if you can stay, please do. Yep.
Okay. Kevin Ramsey.
I thought I should start out my third annual public participation comments to start the school year the way I did the previous two. However, in looking back at those comments, I realized there was some pretty good vitriol in them. I mean, who else would use the term beef-witted to describe the board's thought process on facilities or challenge the superintendent with a famous movie quote? Those of you who know me know I'm not a mean or a vindictive person. I think I just, in the words of one person sitting here, share a different perspective than the majority of the board. That perspective is rooted in common sense, not common core, reform. However, I am a realist, too. I know that this top-level reform is not necessarily going away. Unfortunately, this district's knee-jerk reaction to the changing educational culture has caused the domino effect of bad decisions that left the teachers, parents, and most importantly, the children in harm's way. One of the cornerstones of the campaign that I ran in the spring was to increase transparency of the board to its constituents. There is greater trust in the board when there are open and honest lines of communication happening. Lately, those lines have become rather haphazard in nature, often leading to nowhere. It culminated last year with the elimination of a second public participation opportunity at board meetings. While I am happy that it's back on the agenda tonight to discuss and that other chances for improving transparency, like the audio and video streaming, are being given a chance, I didn't think I could rest until there were more opportunities for the public to be heard. I literally had no other ideas on how to do this until my curiosity on why a high-ranking official within this administration would leave 2 weeks before school started got the best of me. One of the first things I did was look at the district where this person went and study their Board of Education. I was awestruck by the agendas of their meetings and the simplicity of how it is laid out in board book, not just for the board members, but also the public. The differences in the agenda of their meetings, while following the same format outlined by the IASB, as compared to ours, are night and day. By now, I'm probably running out of time to go into any detail, so I'm giving you all a copy of the agenda of one of their recent meetings. I think it's possible you could all learn something from this agenda to help make these meetings run more efficiently and start building that trust.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mrs. Moak?
Amy Kaminsky.
Good evening. Welcome.
I just basically have some concerns about the changes in the school schedule for this year at the elementary schools, that we have added 35 minutes to the day, but we've taken away 5 minutes from lunch and recess. And according to my fifth graders, we didn't have time to finish with lunch today in the 20 minutes that they have to eat. My concern is that we've lengthened the school day and shortened the amount of time that our children actually get to move around. It's a long day. I think they need to be active. I think that being active will help them learn better and pay more attention when they're actually in the classroom. And I guess my question is, what's the reasoning behind doing that? And would you consider giving our kids a little bit more time to move around? That's all.
Thank you very much. Amy, which school are you with?
Lincoln.
Okay, thank you. That's right. Just for me.
Larry Che.
So, good evening. Just like Amy said, I've got a second grader, Forrest Glenn, and with the school day being lengthened, I was surprised to find out that lunch was shortened by 5 minutes. So, you know, my second grader didn't have enough time to eat. You know, 15, 20 minutes is enough time for kids to really have the lunch. So, again, just like Amy said, I'm wondering if there's something that can be done to possibly give the kids a little more time to eat during lunch. Thank you.
Aaron Dieter.
Good evening. Thanks for taking the time to listen to my concerns this evening. I just wanted to spend a couple minutes talking about kindergarten this year. I'm curious to know what about the specials regarding kindergarten. Based on the schedule, it appears that all of the specials have been lengthened due to the longer day, and yet no additional core instructional time has been added. I would also like to know why the morning and afternoon schedules at Lincoln are different. As it is, the morning class has PE 3 days a week for 20 minutes, while the afternoon will have it 2 days a week for 30 minutes. And I'm just curious to know why there's inconsistency in the daily amount of PE time that the two sections have. I feel like there's so much research that shows that the positive effects of consistent exercise are just tremendous. So it would seem that the morning group has the advantage. And I just think that the inconsistency with the schedule between morning and afternoon kindergarten also potentially adds some unnecessary work for the PE teachers with regard to lesson planning. And I just wondered if anyone considered that with creating a schedule. Finally, based on the board report from January 12, 2015, class size targets for the 2015-16 school year in kindergarten were 20 to 22 students. At Lincoln this year, there are over 22 children in both of the morning sections and one of the afternoon sections. And I just wonder at what point is another section opened or are aides added to help in the classrooms? Because the board sets the class size targets, I'm just curious how the administration and the board monitors this. I'd just like to know what the process is once the class sizes go above the targets. And as a parent, I wonder why the targets are in place if there doesn't seem to be a clear plan of action for when those targets are exceeded. And I just, with these things in mind, I just keep wondering if the children's best interests are really at the heart of these decisions or if it's just scheduling. And I just wanted to bring that up. Thank you for the time. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Felicia Hopper.
Good evening.
I won't cry this year at the first meeting.
It's the first day of school. It's okay.
Let's say I wrote it down this year, so hopefully I won't cry. I'd like to address the board on two topics tonight, the first being the reduction of lunch and recess, which we've heard several times, and the Spanish language culture addition to level 3. When the announcement was made about the extension of the school day for K through 5 in March, I attended a town hall meeting where it was discussed. There was no mentioning of the shortening of the time of lunch and recess. In fact, there was a handout from the district stating that the time would remain the same.
Many people at the meeting asked for time to be added to lunch and recess. I was shocked when I received the new schedule from my principal and reached out to my principal and the board to try and understand the reason behind this reduction. Upon talking to my principal, I was told a study was done that determined all the time needed for children to eat was about 10 to 15 minutes, with more time they just socialize. I'm just wondering if that study is available for us to look at and when the study was done, and if that study took into account the winter months when the kids are coming in from outside with their boots, their hats, and their gloves. I think it's crazy to ask our children to gobble down their lunch in 10 to 15 minutes. At Hadley, they have 30 minutes, and at West, they have 45 minutes for lunch. But yet, our K through 5 children have 20 minutes at most. This is not teaching them good eating habits. I also understand that today at recess was cut short to line the students up in time to get in for lunch, which is not acceptable in my mind either. So you've already cut recess by 5 minutes, but now you're cutting it shorter so that they can line up in time to get in for lunch, so they can get in there, so they can get in and eat the lunch in 10 to 15 minutes. You just seem to be shortening everything up. My second topic is Spanish language culture. I'd like to understand the reasoning behind this addition. 2 years ago, or maybe it's three, I can't remember when think tanks all started, but I sat through several presentations on the addition of Spanish to level K through 5. I thought it was great, but wanted it added to all classes. My children never got to benefit because it started in kindergarten. We had asked several times, can we not just teach the older kids one day a week? The presentation showed that there was no value in having language once a week. The real impact is when language is taught daily. So what changed to make the difference to say that now teaching our children Spanish language once a week is impactful? Where is the data to show that? Why did the district make the change when they told us 2 years ago it wasn't an impactful thing to do?
About 30 seconds.
Okay, I think there's just a very a lot of confusion over this new Spanish language culture that's being taught. There has been no information given to parents. And I think it's creating great confusion and frustration. So I would have asked that as a district, we would have supplied that information to our parents prior to the school year starting. That's all I have.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And I didn't cry.
You were great.
Willie DeFabio.
Good evening.
Good evening, and thanks very much for the time that you serve on the board. Put together a letter and sent it to the board last week, and I'm going to give you a condensed version of it now, if you will. I've been to a few meetings in the past few months, typically meeting early. I'm more interested in hearing how you all operate, how you work together, what some of the challenges are that the district faces, and what some of the things are that you're considering for the solutions to some of those challenges. I choose not to participate because I'm more interested in hearing how the board operates. And as a former board member, I find myself a bit sensitive to adding time to what are already long meetings. When I've left these meetings, I've had an increasingly uncomfortable, unsettling feeling over what I've seen and heard, and it became very clear after this recent meeting. What is displayed by the board are qualities that at times seem to be the polar opposite of the learner characteristics that we as a community of learners espouse. These learner characteristics are what we want our children to possess so that they may develop into productive, self-sufficient citizens and lifelong learners. The board, whether you realize it or not, are also students. Whether you're new board members or veterans, you are also students. You are very much in a learning mode. You are learning about board procedures. You're learning about state law. You're learning how to work together, how to understand the other person's point of view, and the responsibility of the role that board members have. You have an extraordinary responsibility to each other to learn and practice these characteristics so that you may be effective and productive board members. I have three observations and recommendations, and I've given you more details on these. One is to review the board code of conduct that you all have agreed to, and to take a look at that. the reality is that if the public's not happy with your service, you will not be voted in should you choose to run again.
1 minute.
My suggestion is to be self-governing and take a look at those and to call each other out in a respectful manner if that's not being followed. Secondly, is to look at the concept of teams and what teams are and what high-functioning teams are and what their characteristics are. And the third one is to revisit the concepts of transparency and confidentiality. And to make sure that you're understanding those and that your comments and actions follow those. This doesn't mean that everybody always agrees with each other or that there aren't moments or times of stress, disagreement, or frayed nerves. Nor does it mean that a board meeting is in, quote, everything is a beautiful moment where everybody's always agreeing or smiling. But it does mean that in spite of these challenges of working with people with strong differing viewpoints and backgrounds, there's a pervasive atmosphere of respect, collaboration, and focus on the district's missions and responsibilities. And in closing, my intent is to say to you as a group, you have accepted a great responsibility, and part of that responsibility is to learn to work as a team, to listen, and to learn so that your job as a board member can be more productive and actually more enjoyable. And most importantly, you will improve the educational process for all of our children and have been an excellent steward of the taxpayers' contributions. Thank you very, very much.
Good. Thank you, Willie. Thank you.
That's it.
That's it? Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Can I make one comment?
Sure.
It's not to Mr. DeFabio, but it's to some of the other comments. I read your email. I share some of the same concerns some of the parents here have with the lengthening of the school day. I have one that's going to be in the cultures class, and it's one of the reasons why Mrs. Clark and I voted against the budget was we're spending an awful lot of money, essentially in my world. You know, people would disagree with this, but being, you know, babysitters. So I don't see any value to it educationally, so I have concerns about that. I agree with the lunch. I pick my son up most days. We rush to get home and get back. It's a good time for him to talk to me about things that concern him at school, and we can reflect on that. And the school district, to me, is taking some of that time away. And that bothers me. And it bothers me in that the school district didn't ask us prior to us being on the board whether we wanted that or not. I'm hoping that as a board, I thought that at some point we agreed. I hope that we're following up with each and every one of you. I certainly as a board member follow up with the emails that I receive, the conversations that I have, so I hope that staff's also doing that. And if they're not, certainly let us know that.
Mm-hmm. Thank
you, Kurt. So to that end, Karen Carlson will be reaching out to each parent who spoke tonight with their concerns. Also, if there was an issue raised for a principal or a specific school, we'll make sure those connections are made as well. And then as a district, we will be putting out communication tomorrow. I'm hopeful by the end of the day to the parent community regarding the schedule. So thank you all for coming out tonight. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. And also, we did receive an email from a parent at Lincoln School earlier today that I responded to. But again, I think identifying four issues and had copied Lincoln's principal, who's here, and thanked her for using that chain of command to make sure you go to the principal, who's that building leader. So I appreciate that. Thank you. All right. Thank you, Nancy. All right, discussion items. Let's see, board meeting norms. This was alluded to earlier, but on this past Thursday night, August 20th, and it had been announced in our previous meeting, the board met with our field service director from the Illinois Association of School Boards, and that is at least once a year, if not sometimes twice a year, depending on if it's an election year and you're reforming as a board. But the ability to come together as a board, and for board self-evaluation, as we were having that night, and kind of reforming as a board, as a new board, do that in closed session. So we met on Thursday night, we opened the meeting, and then we went into closed session to have that discussion. Because it's in closed session, what I can share with you are what are described as next steps. and want to tell you that we, as a board, came together with a group of what we're calling norms. They were distributed to the board. Everybody got their copy, right? And it was actually a discussion that we had about forming, certainly as a new board, but also how we want to facilitate the meeting. Myself, in the role of board president, to facilitate, and one of our norms is not control the meeting, but to facilitate that, because it's a board meeting and it's a business meeting. But also how we will work with each other. And so for the record, and for those who are here live and those who are watching it live streaming, I'll just walk through those and I'll open it up to any comment. First one is to contact the superintendent with agenda questions prior to the meeting. We had talked about Monday morning of the board meeting so that there's a respect for staff time that will be or might be necessary to have the information available at the board meeting like we are tonight. The second one is the board president's role to facilitate, not control the meeting, by monitoring the discussion based on the above norms or based on the norms, and checking with the board to invite any new comments or be ready to move on to the next item. The third one is to respect time and the other board work to be accomplished at the regular meeting. The fourth one is have an effective discussion with reasonable time limits to move on to other agenda items, including closed session as needed at the end of the regular meeting. Number five, one person speaks at a time. Don't interrupt. Number six, state your position concisely. Summarize. Number seven, listen and be open to others' point of view, their advocacy, as we described it, on an issue. Number eight, withhold judgment. Number nine, give freely of your experience, but don't dominate the discussion. Number 10, respect each other's point of view and ask questions to clarify understanding. Number 11, presume positive intention of others' opinions. Number 12, if a board member agrees on a subject, state that without repeating the entire discussion. And number 13, last one, avoid debate that loops the same point between individuals. So in other words, getting caught up back and forth and having to at some point agree to disagree. Okay? So those are the norms that we came up with in our board discussion that night. In some ways, responding to some of the points made by Mr. DeFabio. And I'd open it up to any comments. Sure.
I just had a couple of comments about this, about some of them, kind of reflecting back to what we talked about last Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, the first one, which was contact the superintendent with agenda questions prior to the meeting.
Sure.
To respect staff time that would be necessary to have the information available. I guess I don't know that that should necessarily be a norm, because I feel, you know, we will provide as many questions in advance as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But during discussions at the meeting, there's all sorts of items that come up. We'll be thinking, we'll have questions that will come up during discussion. And so I don't want, to me, this norm is the same, like you can't have, there's no questions to be asked at the meeting. That's my fear with that.
Yeah,
no. I don't know if maybe there's, if you want to keep it, if there's rewording of that, if possible, provide them, mm-hmm. but I don't think that it should be a definitive that all questions need to be asked for the meeting, because I think questions will come up as we're here, sure. Later in the day, or as we have discussions with people.
So your concern is that we want to make sure that this doesn't take away from the open discussion.
Right.
Yeah, which... is one, I'm hearing what you're saying. It wasn't the intent to do that. It was to, as one can, maybe give a heads up. Yeah. Ding.
So maybe it's just
tweaking that.
Tweaking the wording a little bit of it. I mean, and I know, you know, we've talked about it before about, you know, getting our agendas earlier too, so we
sure.
can provide those questions earlier as well.
Yep.
Maybe okay. It is just your point about language, say, in most cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to make sure questions are still open during the meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If possible, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
If possible, the superintendent. I just guess, I just don't think it should be a definitive. I think it's as a courtesy, which I think we would all do that as a courtesy anyway.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the intention.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you want to leave it as a norm, I don't think it should be a.
Okay. do some. I know that I had asked for feedback on any of these from people, so we'll do that tonight too, and then I'll get that back out to everybody.
I don't want to repeat what Stephanie said, but I agree with her.
Okay. On that one too, Kurt. Okay. All right. Any other comments?
I had a couple.
Sure.
My issues were with 3, 4, and 9. Mm-hmm. 3 and 4, I'm not sure that we came to consensus on any of that. I still have concerns when we start to put, and I know that there's other members of the board that have concerns about time. I articulated that time is time, and we're here serving the public, and it takes how long it takes. And, you can interpret that how you want, and I get concerned when we start to restrict time, that restriction can be a restriction on board members. So I'm not sure that we had any consensus of that, other than the fact that we agreed that we wouldn't repeat the same statement that maybe somebody else did, other than to say what I just did, which is I agree with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not to argue the point over and over again. But I'm not mm-hmm. sure that we came in to any kind of consensus on restricting time. So that was on 3 and 4. Then I'll go to 9. My only issue with 9, it's kind of open to interpretation. I'd like to maybe see that to say, to maybe say it, have something along the lines of give others time to express their opinion.
Mm-hmm.
On the end of it. So that was my issue with 9.
Okay.
3 and 4, clearly there were people that thought that was a good idea. Clearly there were some people that thought it was not a good idea. I don't know if we got consensus to make it a board one. So. Mm-hmm.
Any comments on those otherwise?
I disagree with that. I disagree that this has worked. In 3 and 4, I don't think we're not trying to time box conversations. The words I pull out of 3 and 4 are respect time and have effective discussion.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
More says have effective discussion with reasonable time limits to move on to other agenda items, including closed session if needed at the end mm-hmm. of regular meeting. I guess I would agree with Kurt on that I don't know that we should put in
reasonable time limits.
Time limits. I guess I just get a little bit worried about who's going to set the limit.
Reasonable to me, and reasonable to somebody else, sir. That's another broad definition.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we're tasking you, Erica, with having to do some facilitation, and it's kind of broad on your side, because if you're trying to enforce that number because you believe it's maybe an unreasonable amount of time. There may be a board member that says, "I don't believe at this point it's an unreasonable amount of time," and it's, and then you get in, and I think this is where we had problems the other night. Was then you get into, well, all right, let's make it 30 minutes or 20 minutes, or, well, now you're really boxing people in. So we tried to stay away from that part of it. So, and again, that's the problem here, and that's why I said I don't believe we did come to consensus on that, because that there's definitely a wide range of views on that.
Mm-hmm. I remember this part of this conversation as we kind of worked that through, and where we ended up, the aim of it was to make sure that there was recognition that at the end of the business meeting, often like tonight, we're going to go into a closed session to talk about some really important things. Dean, I think it was you that talked about that, of wanting to have a fresh outlook on it. If we can be respectful of that and know we're going into even a later time. So that was one of the things. But I do remember, too, Kurt, to your point, us saying to each other as the conversation, as we're, focusing on these norms, and should the discussion be new information or someone thinking a little bit differently about something based on the discussion or public comment at the beginning of the meeting and drawing that in, that certainly we wouldn't cut that off. That, in fact, is the whole purpose. So, we were, conscious of that. I hear what you're saying.
So maybe we can add that verbiage.
Sure.
That says that if there's something
I know that we,
conversation.
Yeah, we had agreed to that at the end. So, okay.
So, Erica.
Any other comments?
I am one of the people who thinks the board meeting goes on for too long. And I oftentimes I'm told from public participation other times that they want government to act more like business. And every business meeting I'm involved with has an agenda, has a time for it, and when we come to the end of the time, we close down that meeting and move on to the next item. And my concern is that over the last 2 years while I've been on the board, frequently we end up in closed session and getting out of here at 11:30, 12:30, 1:30 mm-hmm. in the morning. And I don't think we're making good decisions at 1:30 in the morning. I think we should limit what's on the agenda if we're having time getting through that to be able to have a respectful time for meeting so that people who want to join us, either in video or in person, know that they can do that. And I think when we have listening sessions and other community engagement sessions, and we put it out there for an hour, we can sometimes pack a place because they know they're coming for an hour. A lot of times when I talk to people, and I know this is anecdotal, but invite them to a board meeting, they say, no, I'm not going to come on Monday night because you guys won't get out of there until 11 or 12 o'clock at night. And they don't want to come to hear the board meeting. I think that we, on our own self, we need to be self-regulating mm-hmm. to be able to have a reasonable amount of time in a meeting and not to cut off the discussion, but to say, this is an important discussion. Let's continue it on mm-hmm. the next agenda. Let's not stop it and forget it. Let's just move it to the next agenda and we'll continue it then when we have fresh eyes. And sometimes we have a couple of weeks to think about something and we might be able to improve the decision by doing that. Mm-hmm. So that was the issue.
Okay. Eric, I just I don't disagree with some of what you're saying, Dean, in terms of, you know, it is difficult at 1 in the morning that, you know, we're making, you know, we're having discussion about important things that involve people within our district. But the only thing, again, I mean, I look out at the audience tonight. I don't know that I've ever seen this many people at a listening session. So I don't know that argument holds true. The listening sessions I've attended with maybe had 5 or 7 people. So it is, again, a chance for people to come, publicly comment, have a put on record that does not occur at the listening session. It's not an official meeting. Mm-hmm. And so I disagree with you on that mm-hmm. part.
I have two concerns, and I know
sure.
I apologize because I don't want to necessarily just start discussion on this, but I was thinking about it and looking at the norms, and maybe we just talked about this separate. But mm-hmm. You know, two things that I was wondering about is as a board, how we're going to determine what's on the agenda if someone has something they want to discuss, and how are we going to determine that? And then the second thing is follow up with community, either community members that come here and talk or send emails. You know, as a board, you know, they're kind of coming to us asking the questions. So how are we going to make sure we're answering them? I mean, I truly, knowing, having sat out there for a couple of years, I want to make sure that we're trying to address concerns, take things into consideration, not just kind of give people an answer to make them feel comfortable, but truly try to take that information into account and work with the community. So, but mm-hmm. I don't know if we tie that into our norms, but those are kind of two questions I have when I mm-hmm. just through the norms of how are we going to do those things.
Yeah. Well, I wrote those down, and one is certainly the we have as a board, and I know we were all given this information kind of in our, you know, as we were starting up, the single point of contact, which is Paul's administrative assistant, Mrs. Moak, and so being able to funnel through that, knowing then that she's that disciplined kind of check-off person to make sure things are getting funneled through. And so it's part of our discipline as a board to make sure that she has that information as well or knows. So when I, for instance, today when I responded to the parent that wrote, I made sure that she had received a copy of it so that she can see, you know, who's putting it out there. But, yeah, I think this is a good conversation to have even in to deeper dive it in a board president meeting, you know, when you can attend it next or whatever. So I'll add that to my agenda, too. That's good.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe I was wrong, but I was under the impression that the staff did see our emails, what's coming in and going out. Is that true?
That is true. And Nancy looks at that.
Nancy does.
Okay.
But to make sure that she's, again, that point of contact, that she is, it's addressed so that she can say, you know, Paul, Kurt responded, you know, make sure you take a look at it or whatever. I mean, Paul's got, you know, 200 emails, as we all do on any given day. So it's just that being able to funnel that through an individual. But thank you for that. Thanks. Anything else? All right. Okay. It was a good evening. I want to thank all the board members for making time. Anytime board members, you know, break out another evening of their schedule to come together. It was a three-hour meeting and actually went to about 3.5, I think, in the end. So I really appreciate everybody's time and thought it was a good discussion. So thanks. All right. Next one is on the agenda is the Board of Education goals. And I'm going to have Drew help me with this because this was something that we had talked about coming back to, and that typically boards, separate from the administration has its long-range plan, and then obviously we have very specific goals around the long-range plan that have objectives and then goals, goals and then objectives tied. Dr. Gordon has goals himself. And so at the beginning of the, after we reseated as a new board, I had asked if there would be someone willing to sit down and just, you know, re-talk about this. It was, I think, three or four years ago that we've had discussion around board goals, and then they kind of went away, and I think it's important to bring it back. So Drew and I sat down, and I had emailed, and Nancy had sent another copy of the one pager. Does everybody have that? Mm-hmm. So, and in the email that went with that, it said that this was a draft of for board goals, and I just want to correct that. It's not a draft of it's a draft for our board discussion. So there's nothing on here that is expected to be approved by anybody or all that. It's simply I just want to have a few minutes to have us to talk about this. It's not an easy thing to write goals in general. I think, you know, all of us with goals for work and that type of thing, you know how hard that is. And for boards especially, because our work is governance and oversight, there's this desire to want to have very hands-on action-oriented goals. It's just natural to want to do that. So it's trying to think about those larger kind of policy-driven or larger you know, governance goals that help us keep an eye on the direction of the district, the financing programs, those kind of things. So, you know, I'll let Drew weigh in, and then we'll open it up to any comments that people have, and then talk about next steps.
Well, the prior meeting kind of went through the purposes of having the board, the board goals, which again should align with the district's long-range plan. And should drive some of the high level discussions that kind of like an overarching theme for kind of what we're doing. And I think we all need to kind of in some manner kind of buy into these kind of overarching goals to be able to kind of move us forward. But I agree that this is kind of more of a template than it is kind of specific goals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Any observations or thoughts?
You know, I was looking at these. I appreciate the time you guys put into it for sure. I took that, I read through it, and then I thought, you know, if I was going to come up with more goals, and again, Eric had asked me to help her with this, and I felt uncomfortable with doing it just the two of us set a template, but it was interesting. I wrote down the three things that I think the goal of the board should be, and these weren't in any specific order, but I thought that these were the three things that essentially we needed to oversee, and that was that the child is at the heart of the decisions, we hold the superintendent accountable for the performance of the district, and we ensure financial stability for the district. Those to me, you know, when I sat down and I looked at the whole page, I thought, you know, if we put these on our website, how many people are really going to take a look at these? And then I actually went to other districts and started to look, and they equally had long goals, mm-hmm. and I kind of tuned out of them. So for me, in the essence, we wanted that. These were my three. We mm-hmm. don't have mm-hmm. to obviously, you know, adopt those. But I just think maybe we, you know, as we talk about this over time, maybe we shorten this up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the reality is, you know, each student's capable of learning. I mean, those things we pass the superintendent with, and we make sure that those things, the bottom line is we make sure that he's doing those things. So, you know, so that was just my viewpoint,
mm-hmm.
just to kind of frame it a little bit.
Thank you. Yeah, one of the things Kurt's referring to is something that Drew and I talked about that kind of set that kind of philosophy in the district is in you know, including our mission statement, et cetera, are these ideas that there are certain principles that, you know, we have as a district, and they come, you know, they lead from the mission, certainly. But to Kurt's point, you know, your first one, the child is at the heart of decisions, is really around this idea of, you know, every student is capable of learning and progressing, safe environments, education is a shared responsibility. I mean, it is that kind of focus on the child. So I don't disagree with that. But I know what you're saying about going on other districts' websites, because some goals in some districts are very strategic, and they have, you know, again, this kind of umbrella look to them, and others get very specific. So, you know, this is, it's ours to do, it's ours to drive. I think it's, for me, it's differentiating between staff work and board work, making sure that we, you know, stay focused on, you know, those differences.
And just to take time to what you're saying, you know, it is important that we do create that alignment, not only with the long-range plan, but the vision and mission statements.
Mm-hmm.
That,
yeah.
You know, not that they need to be basically the same, because like the mission and the vision statements are kind of, you know, they're even, I think, even more overarching than mm-hmm. kind of what people like to do with
mm-hmm.
or goals. But you know, Kurt, to your point, I what you said was very concise and succinct, and you know, I couldn't find fault with your words. So. But I think that we all need to kind of come together and roll, kind of buy into what our goals are. You know, mm-hmm. and that's a discussion. I think that's an ongoing process.
Yeah.
You
have a plan.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering how often or when we're going to review the long-range plan. I know I saw it on the agenda later for the District 41 long-range plan renewal, but I wasn't 100% sure
mm-hmm.
what that meant. If it just meant we're going to keep the same plan, and I didn't know how often we review it, and if maybe, you know, that's something that even needs evaluated before we come up with board goals. I'm not trying to make more work, but it's just something I've not been involved with. I didn't
sure.
know how, when it had been done, but
mm-hmm.
You know, something I wanted to mention.
Yeah. Well, there is a plan to update. In fact, there's mm-hmm. a working plan to, you know, review the long-range plan, which we do. It's that, you know, we call it a long-range plan, but other organizations call it your strategic plan, right, which everything rolls up into it. You know, it's that umbrella strategy, and then everything has to touch it. So it's school improvement plans, it's the goals of the building leadership teams, et cetera. It all kind of folds up. So that's the work that Paul's doing with his cabinet.
Into that, I think we're going to need to pull together for a special workshop, because that will take a significant amount of time, and the board is integral in that long-range plan. So, Stephanie, you're right. This year, it's up for renewal. So Nancy and I will be reaching out to the board to set up a time to bring the board together to really have that conversation about that long-range plan, looking at the current long-range plan, and then talking about some of those goals and outcomes that the board wants to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
So you're able to give those to me, and then working with CIT, which is within our teacher's master's agreement, that CIT and then the superintendent work together, and then we bring it back to the board. But we definitely need to schedule something fairly soon.
Yeah.
So that's my report. That'll
there you go.
I'll cross that off the list.
Any other comments?
I had a comment.
Yeah.
Sorry. Mine is really unrelated to feedback. I just wanted to ask more for people sitting here and maybe listening at home. I noticed that the norms and the goals, there wasn't a link in the board packet that's on the D41 website. I know we had it in our board packet to the board, and I didn't know if that's
mm-hmm.
common, if that's information. I just thought it might be helpful for mm-hmm. people to kind of follow along and know what we're talking about.
Well, I thought tonight, since we were going to discuss it and there were going to be some changes, I assume some tweaks
right.
to it, that we would then clean that up, get it back to you guys, and then we can put it out there, and it can be one of our reports. So if that makes sense, we'll do that. I didn't want to put it out before we had a discussion about it, so... That's good. Good.
So ultimately, when we kind of we've vetted this out, and we'll have a final document that we will put on the website. And
right. Oh, absolutely.
Come
yeah.
back to us in kind of in a final format.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So at that point, it would also probably be in the
absolutely. It'd be under our, you know, there's a board tab, and then there's information on our, you know, our training when we've done things, and there'd be another tab for that report.
Yeah, I just wanted to understand.
Yeah, well, no, that's good.
Eric, I just have one question.
Yep.
I'm not sure if this, you know, being new to the board, I'm not sure if this falls under board goals or it might, but I'm always kind of, for lack of a better, I'm befuddled by the learner characteristics. I mean, I think we have 1,607 learner characteristics. Mm-hmm. I'm not actually sure
30.
The number 30.
Yeah.
And to me, I don't know where we had discussion, but maybe, I don't know if that's under board goals or at some point in the future. Can we maybe talk about, and I don't know, is that something that staff directed and brings it to the board, or the board directs it down, but I'm almost wondering, mm-hmm. I mean, can we, I can't memorize them. I doubt our fifth graders can, maybe they could, but maybe we can do something really good and have them do five or six things really well, mm-hmm. rather than trying to have them focus in on 30. So.
Well, I could be wrong on the timing, but the history on the learner characteristics, and you know, welcome any chirping in, is that Illinois had state expectations around social emotional learning, and so had presented those, and then it was through I think CIT originally that the learner characteristics were formed so that they could be structured to District 41 versus here's the state of Illinois. And maybe they match, maybe they don't, but that the continuous improvement team as a group wanted to look at it and say, what does this mean to us? And so, you know, it was X number of years ago, 3 or 4, that they came forward. And then last year, this is to Kurt's point, there was 2 years ago a discussion around, so how do we make these germane? How do we make them real and that the kids can understand them? And so there was a concerted effort through Team 21 three years ago, because it rolled out in groups of 10. So to your point, the first year they focused on 10 of those. The second year they added, you know, rolled up the second 10 to make 20. And then last year was the third set to finish it off. And really have teachers focus on... Yeah, no, still 30. So that the teachers could focus on what does this mean and for the students. And the feedback then, because they would, feedback loop goes from Team 21, then back through the building leadership team, because that representative from Team 21 goes back to their buildings through BLT and then reports back. And, in fact, there's a report after each Team 21 meeting that they have to complete and bring back. So wanted to get feedback. How is it going? And the feedback... was that the kids were, you know, certainly much more focused. So to your point, again, they were following on, you know, strategy around these that aligned together, and were able to make some observations in the classrooms and with kids. This is just mine, and it's anecdotal, but I'll share it. But it happened to be like last spring, I think it was, when I got around to the schools, and there was a child who was. Frustrated, I guess, you know, kind of learning something, and then this other child next to them, working with them, they were doing like a paired sharing, and the other student, I mean, I was in the back of the room, but what I heard, you know, her say to the other student is, see, that's a learner characteristic, you stayed with it, and didn't use the term resilience, which was a term, but was able to articulate, here's, you know, good. You know, there was an atta girl, right? Good for you. And I think that was the intention. So it was to break it down.
Eric, I apologize.
No, that's right.
To stay on topic, the question, is it part of a goal or should the learner characteristics be a different conversation for the community?
Yeah, it's really, it comes through the curriculum. It's not a board driven. It's really theirs, but that was a little bit of context for where they came from.
Just for a quick clarifying question.
Yeah.
So this is not this is driven by staff.
Yeah.
So this is
part of social emotional learning.
Different alphabet soup acronyms mm-hmm. kind of drive these. It really doesn't, other than a report to us, it really mm-hmm. doesn't come to the board.
Right. But it's aligned to the state of Illinois social emotional learning standards, but they're owned by the district based on that, you know, what they decided, what the, you know, teachers decided. So
state of Illinois.
Yep. Yep. But I just anecdotally, I think they're important, and I think in all of our, I know in all of our buildings we have posters that were also another kind of visual for children to be able to say, can I articulate what this means? So it's social emotional, which we talk a lot about in this district, you know, in terms of being important. So that's that. So thank you. Yeah. All background. All right. Is that it? We ready to move on? Item C, public participation at board meetings. There's a request from Stephanie and Kurt, and we've heard it tonight and actually heard it in prior meetings about public comment, public participation at the board meetings. So I'll open it up for discussion.
Well, I don't know if you need to start since I'm one of the ones that asked for this sure. discussion item. I know community members that regularly attend meetings have been asking to be able to comment after either after discussion items or at the end of the meeting. They may have questions about what's discussed or presented, and without any comment after the fact, they either have to comment beforehand or wait and come to a subsequent meeting. And I think it's more, to me, having sat on both sides, I think it's more effective to be able to do it at the meeting that the discussion is having. Some of my notes, I think prior discussion, that time has been given as a reason for elimination of it when this was discussed last summer. I look through old minutes, and the public comment at the end of the BOE meetings hasn't really added a significant amount of time to the meetings. I think in the end it might actually save time because community members might pull their comments from the beginning of the meeting to wait and hear the discussion, and then they may actually not even comment, just knowing they have an opportunity to comment afterwards. The value, that questioning the value of the input that's been given after discussion items, once again, I've been on both sides, and now that I'm actually on the board, I do see the value of getting community input on certain items. I'm by no means an expert on things, so it is good to have other perspectives. Mr. Curry tonight, giving his experience with curriculum, I think that was good perspective to hear. And if he had actually been able to comment at the last meeting, I could maybe follow it up with Karen Carlson and Dr. Gordon and ask some of those questions prior to tonight. I know talking about our norms, we want to run meetings more effectively. I think if we run meetings more effectively, we allow the public to comment. That, I think, is just all part of it. Now that we're actually streaming video, people could be watching from home and maybe decide that they want to come in and comment on something that they've seen. So a trustee from Winfield actually told me that that happened for them when they started video streaming. So it was an added advantage to be able to have the public to comment later in the meeting. And honestly, I think we talked a lot last week about being respectful to the community and representing the community and our constituents and the people that have been attending the meetings who are interested in what's going on have been asking for that. And so I think it's something important that we should have back and allow the community to work.
Great. Thank you. Other comments, other observations?
I won't repeat myself. I'll echo everything Stephanie just said.
Okay. So. Thank you, Kurt. Other observations?
So I don't know. I don't know if this is put on here to look at this again, but we spent a fair amount of time last year looking at public participation at board meetings, mm-hmm. and specifically at commenting and how to reduce time at board meetings, but also to recognize that this is a business meeting and that this is a time for the board to finish all the items on the agenda, and we didn't feel at that time that the public participation, it was really public comment, mm-hmm. and that we needed to participate more. So what we did is we started putting together listening sessions. We have the facilities team. We have other sessions that go on throughout the year. We've done some coffees and other things to reach out and have more of a discussion rather than a comment and then, you know, another comment at the end. So I think that our approach that we adopted last year was to say there's a lot better way to engage with the community than during our business meeting. Mm-hmm. That we have to be open to comment, and we take that comment, but we need more time to work with that comment, and that's why we put together the rest of the engagement plan that I know Erica and Paul had been working on. Mm-hmm. So I think we are getting a lot more engagement with the community than we've ever had, and we're finding it's richer than just a comment section at the beginning and the end, and that's mm-hmm. why we get it the way that we did it last year. So I'd like to keep it the way it is.
Okay. That's
kind of how I remember it too. Mm-hmm.
I think it's great that we've added, you know, listening sessions and tried to do a couple of coffees, and we have the facilities task force, but none of those things are things that actually the board members can, we're not allowed to technically really be talking to those, or we are required to be there, depending on the structure. I mean, there's not a whole group discussion. We can't at a listening session stand up and talk to everybody who's there as board members, right? And I don't mm-hmm. think we're allowed to be doing that. So this is the only forum where all board members should be present, can speak, and I think it's a different format. I think those other avenues are important to get feedback from the community on specific issues, but when we're handling specific issues of board business that the community wants to get input on, you know, a listening session or a coffee may not even be timely to those, you know, those events. And I just think they're two separate things, and I don't think it's a replacement for the public comment mm-hmm. at the meeting. Like I said, Dean said one of the reasons was time, and from what I've seen, public comments at the end of meetings has not added a significant amount of time to the meetings mm-hmm. that it justifies not mm-hmm. not offering it when the people who come to the meetings have been asking for a while now to add it back.
Mm-hmm. I'll add something that Stephanie didn't touch on. And for me, this is an important thing, and as I sat on the park board, I've mentioned his name a couple of times, but a mentor of mine, Keith Shane, rest in peace, but he was big on public meetings and allowing board members to comment at public meetings because there was a record of it. There was a history of it. Same with the resident making comment at public meetings. There's a history of it. So tonight, when Mr. Curry, I'll pick on him a little bit, when Mr. Curry made his comments, he's going to be entered into the minutes. His comments will be on audio. And so if he believes in a year that nobody took into account what he had to say, he can come back and say, on this audio, at this time, reflected in these minutes, I asked this board this. And it's a way that the public can keep the board accountable. Because there's a record of it. And for some on the board, that may not be important. For me, it is. And those things don't happen at a listening session. So there's a difference. And when we talk about business meetings, well, that's the business part of the meetings. It's the time that the public and board members can make statements, put them on public record, and they can be then part of history so that they can't be forgotten.
Mm-hmm. So I agree with you, Kurt, that we need public participation. And you pointed out quite succinctly that Mr. Curry did get up. He got his time to participate. It's in the meetings, and then we move on. So I don't see why he has to stand up and say it again at the end of the night, or anybody else would have to stand up and say it again at the end of the night. I think we give people time to comment. We receive the comments, and then we go back and we think about them and reflect on them and respond to people, which we put together mm-hmm. the plan to respond to people. So I don't think there's anybody on the board who doesn't want to hear from the public. The issue was we felt it was a very one-way communication, and we wanted to have more interaction. So the coffees are when you actually sit with people and discuss at length an item or some of the other different listening. This week, I think we're going to be at the Glen Ellen Backyard Barbecue. Mm-hmm. And we're going to man tables there so people can come up and talk to us about what's going on. And I think that that's a better use of everyone's time than someone making a three-minute comment and then making another three-minute comment at the end. That's all. Mm-hmm. So I think we're in agreement. We just don't agree exactly on how best to manage the meeting.
Well, and I guess, you know, for me, again, and this is maybe Stephanie articulated this, so I might be drawing a blank here, but again, comments can be made here, and someone that's sitting in the audience can double back at the end of the meeting versus actually having them to come. The other problem with the backyard barbecue, and it's, you know, it's great, and it's nice that we can interact, and
you know, I can be out on a walk and interact with people they do on a daily basis with me. The problem with that, and it's been pointed out to me by the board members, is, well, that's what they told you, or maybe that really didn't happen. Maybe Kurt's just making that up. But you may be at the backyard barbecue in your session, and you're hearing from residents, you're passing along. When someone speaks tonight, all seven of us heard.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It's not interpretation. It's not any of those things. That's not to say that those other avenues aren't good ideas. They're a way to reach out to the community. I agree. I don't disagree with that. But the public comment part of it, when you're the most important aspect that the public has to comment of all the issues. I mean, coffees. You know, what did we have? Two or three people there, and that was important for those couple of people. But you know, to limit them, back to Stephanie's point, I just don't think it adds that much time.
Maybe to make the point, Mrs. Moak, was there anybody tonight who turned in a sheet who didn't get a chance to speak? Was there anybody tonight who turned in a sheet that didn't get it? So I think the people who came to comment got the comment. They got it on the record, and I think that we've all heard it.
Any other comments?
I mean, as I recall, when this all whole thing started, we did an experiment that we were doing public comment after each action item, and I found that exhausting, and I didn't think that worked. I think prior to that, we did have a public participation or public comment at the beginning of the meeting, at the end of the meeting. I don't know that it did added a lot of time, as I recall. I don't know that there's a lot of other municipalities do two public comments. I think there's some. I don't know that it makes sense to do the public comment after each action item. I just wouldn't see it better.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah.
I said actually either after the discussion items, which I know that was a new proposal last year, or just at the end of the meeting. I wasn't saying that it had to be after each discussion item.
Right.
Just to have.
No, I was really just.
But I just wanted
about
to make
the,
sure that you knew that.
No, I was really just talking about after action
yeah.
items.
Mm-hmm. And I think an important point of clarification is, you know, I've never said that the community has been stifled and doesn't have the ability to comment. As Dean pointed out, I mean, they've all been able to comment at the beginning of the meeting. My point is there's discussion items that are on the agenda that they have interest in, but they would like to have the opportunity to hear the discussion or hear the presentation before they comment on it. They'd like to be educated before they're... I mean, sometimes mm-hmm. you don't even have the presentations out in the board packet, so there's no idea what's actually mm-hmm. being presented. And so mm-hmm. I think it's not a matter of you have an opportunity to comment, you can do it at the beginning. It's when is it a valuable time to comment? I think it's of more value for them to be able to comment after they've had the advantage of hearing the information that was shared at the meeting. And maybe, you know, if it's too complicated to do it after discussion items, then do it at the end of the meeting. And if you know, if they're so inclined to stay till the end of the meeting to comment, you know, I go back to Mr. Curry's example. I think mm-hmm. if he had been able to comment, I think that would have actually been useful information for the administration because they could have said, you know, those are good questions, and we're going to get answers to them to make sure that we answer that for the board. So at the next meeting when we're looking to take action on this, we've answered those questions. Mm-hmm. Well, now I hadn't actually thought of some of those things, so I'm sitting here going, well, those are good questions, and I didn't. So
that's
I think that's
what you're
exactly
saying.
My reason why I think it makes sense to do that.
Okay. Any other comments? Any new points? Anything?
I mean, I want to repeat what Dean said, and I concur with what Dean said. If Stephanie's proposal is to have one public comment and move it in the meeting, we could look to do that. But I think we have discussed this at length last time, so.
Is there any consensus to change the time of public comment to shift it in the meeting at all? Is there any consensus to do that? Stephanie, you're interested. Patrick, any desire to do that? No. Joe, you're saying. Drew, anything?
Is there something that we would bring open for a vote at the next meeting?
Well, I'm just looking for consensus. If the board has consensus around changing what we're already doing, then let's hear that. And if not, then we continue with what we're doing.
Why can't it be put on the next meeting to take action on?
Well, the board has to have consensus that it would want to take action on it. That's the question. But what I'm hearing is that there's the majority that's saying that public comment at the beginning of the meeting and having, and I brought this with me because I know that this is important, but this is, it's, we've all seen it. This is the proposed community engagement plan for, you know, this year, and it's in fact even, there are things added to it in terms of us being able to have engagement. And I haven't weighed in, but I would say simply that I took my notes from last time and reviewed them when we had this conversation, and I feel like, and Stephanie, I guess you just made this point for me, it's that when I hear comment at the beginning of the meeting, especially as we're talking about things later on, it's fresh for me. Certainly if I get emails during the week, I bring those forward as well and respond to those, but when it's in the moment at the beginning of the meeting, then for me it helps to inform either I'm on track or maybe that's something I need to think about or what's more questions. So if there's not consensus to move this forward to change it, then that's the will of the board.
Just so I understand, so I'm clear on that.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like Kurt and Drew and myself would like to move it forward, and Joe and yourself, Dean and Patrick, are saying not to. But I would like to understand, mm-hmm. you know, what the exact reasoning is that. Is time? It's too much.
It's not time for me. I'll answer that question. Time for me. It's really.
If your community is asking for it, I don't understand why you wouldn't.
Well, there are some community members asking for it. Yes, I agree. Again, I'm not going to repeat myself from last time, but I really thought about this deeply, and I know my comments are on record from that meeting, and it was really about wanting. As I looked at some other boards and been to, other board meetings in the area, that when, for me, it's just personal, but public comment at the beginning of the meeting refreshes and refocuses what those issues are for those who come and provide that, and via email certainly as well. And I know I've made the comment, I'm a paper and a reader, and so I much prefer to get things in writing because it helps me to discern that. And I see public participation, that we call it really as public comment, which is to make a comment, have us think. We all take pretty good notes, I think, and that helps inform the rest of the conversation and the discussion. But for me, it's really about the engagement piece, which is where I'd rather put, a really board effort, which I think we've done a good job at, and you said that too. So, I've heard.
I agree with that.
The purpose, the reasoning behind the other board members. And I appreciate it. I think it's fair to have the conversation, and it doesn't mean it won't come up again. But I'm not hearing consensus to make a change at this point.
I just think it's disappointing that your community members who actually attend the meeting are asking for this, and I don't mm-hmm. understand
I think it's a disagreement on the where public comment has, at least for me, the most value, and those other pieces in terms of engagement really fill out the story. So we that would be I won't repeat myself. One of my norms. All right. Thank you. Last item is an intergovernmental agreement with the Village of Glen Ellyn reciprocal reporting, and Dr. Gordon's going to lead this discussion.
Yeah, this is a reciprocal reporting agreement between the Village of Glen Ellyn and the Glen Ellyn School District 41. The agreement outlines information that we would share and how we would work together. Some of those points are those general cooperation, mm-hmm. the reporting of criminal activity, the confidentiality in the records, and the guidelines for interviewing within the school, on the school premises. We've had a fantastic relationship with the Glen Ellyn Police Department, and this is one of those tools that helps strengthen that relationship further. As my number one contact over there is Bill Homer, and these are pieces that he and I have been talking about and ensuring that we get this in place for our district.
And that's going to be signed off on? I mean, what's the process for that?
Yeah, the next process is, again, it's on tonight for action items as well.
Mm-hmm.
That if the board so chooses to agree to the reciprocal agreement, we would sign off on it, right. And then we would send it over to the Glenelg Police Department and have them sign off on it as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
For the
yeah, no, I
we're
appreciate
doing it. Tonight.
It.
Yeah.
I had one question, Erica.
Sure.
I'm a long time a critic of Dr. Gordon on many issues, but I have heard good things from the police department side about how he's moved things forward on in terms of safety, mm-hmm. reporting. There were a lot of issues prior to him getting here, and, so that's
thank
credit
you.
For that.
Thank
I just, the one question I had on our policy, and maybe, you know, I try to read these whereas clauses.
I understand.
But the only thing that I wanted to ensure within our own policy is that if something happens and it's reported, let's say, to an assistant principal,
mm-hmm.
just that they, do we know the chain of command within that? I mean, does the assistant principal then report to the police department? Does the assistant principal report to, Karen, does it mm-hmm. report to you? I just want to make sure that we spell that out internally
mm-hmm.
so that our staff knows exactly the steps they need to take, because you could be an assistant principal, something's reported, you get caught up in the moment, mm-hmm. you're not quite sure what you need to do, and so.
They are outlined, the principals work with their administration, their APs on that, and each one is also dictated by the situation. If it's, for instance, God forbid, a child abuse piece, there are state laws that really govern what you have to do, that we're all reporters, so we have to make that call, and then we have guidelines in place as to whom within the CSO is being notified, the principal, and all those pieces. So we do have some nice, clear communication, or internally, it's not part of the policy, more of an AP, I would say, than it is part of the policy. But each situation's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a fight, you know, where they're calling the police, that's a situation where, again, depending on the severity of it, the administration would handle it, the AP would more than likely be in contact with, almost guarantee it, be in contact with the principal. They would make that call to the police department. They would also notify us afterwards. We're not, again, if it's a serious situation, it's 911, and then you let us know, but through the 911 system, we're notified of that as well. And then Bill Homer and myself also have conversations about each of the situations that he has questions or comments on, or I do. Mm-hmm. So it's a good process,
mm-hmm.
But from the principal standpoint, they work with their assistant principal to really ensure that they have clean communication, because that, what you're bringing up is an important point. Who's calling whom and when? And when does the CSO get involved?
Does
that answer it?
It does. I just want to make sure, because even you had a slight hesitation in
mm-hmm.
that you said, well, I can almost guarantee it. I want to just make sure maybe for policy committee, just
mm-hmm.
to say, you know, if these things, because, again, the state sounds like they've got guidelines.
Yeah.
We have to adhere to those. But within here, if one of these incidents occurs, and I was using the assistant, but it could be a principal.
It could be anybody.
Superintendent that's walking through the building. It could
mm-hmm.
be Lori walking through
mm-hmm.
the building. Just to make sure that, you know, we have a guideline in place that, you know,
the
that
reporting.
You're getting notified. And
I appreciate that.
So.
Thank you.
We also, it ties into, because we also have our emergency preparedness plan, too, and so that is certainly tied to it as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
So, currently, there is an IGA in place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we're not necessarily renewing it, because it's just an enhanced version of the IGA.
Mm-hmm.
And our council has reviewed it.
The council has reviewed this.
And it takes state law into consideration.
All it does.
That's perfect, and that's exactly what we need to hear. And I'm going to dive into the weeds for a second.
Okay.
Probably my lack of knowledge of law enforcement and reporting.
Okay.
Exhibit B, the guidelines for interviews.
Page what?
Page 12 or so in the.
I gotcha.
It's related to non-school-related matters. The interviewing process.
Interviewing the guardian.
I guess I'm just surprised that in the exigent circumstances, the the parent not necessarily be present in that interview. Mm-hmm. I guess my question is, Todd's not here, but is that state statute that has that as so?
I believe so, but I can reach out to him and ensure. But
I mean, I understand it for school-related matters, because it's the same.
Mm-hmm.
I understand it for non-school-related matters. I understand if the situation is pressing, demanding. And
let me reach out.
We should do that. In addition to that, as board members, we all are bound to the same. As a board member, if a matter comes to our attention, we also have to pursue it. So we probably need to go through that and do a little training on that to make sure. That
and this is specific around the interviewing process.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there are steps, because sometimes to include the parent could be detrimental to the child. So that's why there are steps. So we should review.
And Joe, just to be clear so I know what I'm asking, it's the ones that are unrelated to school. That's what you're referring to. That's what I thought I heard you say.
Number 1A and Exhibit B.
Yeah.
So it's unrelated to school, but the police officers still have the right to come in and interview.
Right.
Correct. I just wanted to make sure I had that. Had that.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Paul.
Sorry.
I think you've done a good job with the local police department in tightening up some issues. And I want you to continue to work with that. I read through this. I really don't have any issues. I just wanted to give you a kudos on your work with them.
Thank you. No, I appreciate it. And really, it's a great team. We have Dave Scarmato who assists there, Erica Craviel as well. They've become a very good team. And then each of our principals and assistant principals throughout the district do a fantastic job. But I appreciate it. I take it on behalf of the team and not just me.
Okay.
All
right.
Do police define school administrators anyway?
Do the police, did you say?
I mean, this whole contract talks about assistant principals, but do we define school administrator anyway?
I don't think within this document. It's not. But I would.
Well, under Exhibit B, it states specifically the principal or designate, an assistant principal or school administrator, so that would be internal, counselors, et cetera, who are under.
Anybody in the CSO office? Or
Lori, would it be titled under our job descriptions?
Yeah. To me, it's possible.
Okay.
That's for Todd.
Okay. Yeah. And he has reviewed this.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Under action items, we have a consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately?
Yes. I'd like to remove the minutes from August 10th, 2015 regular meeting.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Okay, all right. Well, what we'll do is we'll take that out and we'll take action on that as a separate item once we have that discussion. May I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes item 1, human resources, personnel report, employment recommendations, resignation and retirement, internal transfers. Number 2, finance, facilities and operations, treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue expenditure summary report, summary of bills and payroll, vandalism damage report, disposal of surplus property, the 2015-2016 FOIA report, school district payment orders dated August 5th, 2015 through August 18th, 2015, and item 3, other matters, which include now the August 10th, 2015 regular meeting closed session. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Mr. Ellis and Mr. Elger. Roll call.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Buckles?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mrs. Mill?
Yes. All right. Stephanie, let me go to you with the minutes. So I may have a motion to approve the August 10th as presented.
Motion.
Second.
Discussion.
I'll second.
Okay.
Discussion.
Yeah. I thought yours was it. Sorry.
I never get to second.
I never get to facilitate it.
I've emailed with Nancy about this today. There were some things that I thought needed added to the minutes. And I guess just to clarify, she actually said that if we want to add things to the minutes, we need to pull it from the consent agenda.
Correct.
Moving forward. It's more if you just have a change to wording.
If there's a typo, yeah.
So I actually started to type something up just in the middle of the day. I was kind of rushed through it. But just to let everyone know the things that I thought were missing from the minutes that were important to capture were for the budget, kind of the reasoning that Kirk and I gave for why we voted no on the budget, and then the motion that I made about looking at a leasing space from the Park District to house our preschool programs to free up space to elementary school, and then some things on the academic update. So I can get with Nancy about what I put together for that. But those were not in the minutes, and I thought were important to be captured.
Okay. Thank you. So for process, we will not take action on this item until we get the minutes back with corrections.
Well, you have an open action
on
the floor.
Yeah,
so
we have to close that. Yeah.
Go through the roll for it.
Yeah, let's do that.
Is that a table?
No, we have to take the roll call on whether or not we'll approve these as presented. So what we have in front of us is this set. What Stephanie has presented are some items that she would like added or adjusted. And that would mean these minutes will not be posted now, right, until after the next meeting.
We need to discuss what those specifics are to embed into the minutes to include to be updated in the minutes.
Yeah, is it possible to read? I know you said you were.
Why do we have to read them in if they're going to be on the agenda if we don't vote no? That's
right.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
So what we have in front of us is this.
Takes me a little longer.
That's okay, John. We're good.
I described it already. I can. I don't know if you need it more detail. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it was just kind of why we voted no for the budget.
Mm-hmm.
The motion that I made about when we talked about the facilities task force, and I suggested adding an option to the table about leasing Park District property.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't captured in the minutes and all, and I thought that was important to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's under Dr. Gordon's report.
Because that's where it was.
Yeah,
it's on there.
Yeah, it's under page 4. Five.
No, it was under mine.
I missed it. Okay.
Yeah.
That one,
sorry.
Sorry.
That's okay. It's a lot of minutes.
I missed it too.
Yep. So that's in there. So it's really reason behind your vote on the budget.
Oh, you know why? No, I didn't see it because see under superintendent's report, community task force update. Oh yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I'm losing my mind.
No, you're not. First day of school. You've been up since 4.
But for the other reasons, I do think it's important to put a reason for why we voted no for the budget, if nothing else.
Understood. You had a third one, though, right?
Yeah, what's the third one?
For the academic update, I had typed up everything I was going to present for that. I didn't know if that could be an addition to the minutes just for more information for the information that I presented. But, you know, if when you put... Sometimes if people for public participation or share a letter or a speech, we put that in the minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we could just include that in the minutes as well.
Well, the minutes aren't a verbatim. It's a summary, so.
Well, and maybe not in the minutes, maybe in a attachment to the minutes, I guess.
As an attachment to
your
comments?
Yeah, attachment.
It would be attachment.
Yeah,
that's what
I meant, sorry.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Joe?
I probably missed that. You're saying the attachments you showed us, you want attached or what you wrote?
Those are attached, but I had actually written up, and so I was going to just include it with that, so it was there's just more information.
Mm-hmm. My comments on that are
not in the minutes. I meant not in the minutes as an attachment.
My comments on that, I'm good with the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Go, you know, get the verbiage about the
not approving the budget. Mm-hmm. The second one, I don't feel comfortable with doing just because you wrote them up, but other things were said too. So to me, it's captured on the audio. I think that's fair to be captured on the audio and not get a somewhat verbatim representation in the written minutes, as long as there's an adequate summary. If you don't think the summary is adequate, then I'm all for that being amended. But mm-hmm. I would look forward to seeing these minutes revised per those two.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess I would be okay if we just the summary was a little bit more detailed than the minutes. It doesn't have to be verbatim. I was just offering that to simplify the process. But
so if you pulled out like your four or five key points, right. I think there were like three or four key points. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. All right. So what we have, the open action item is whether or not to approve the minutes as presented with the agreed upon revisions.
You're just going to want to vote on the minutes in front of you.
You're going to want to vote on the official minutes. Yeah.
And then a second.
Because then you would just be giving liberty to Nancy and I to write the minutes.
Right.
And,
yes.
And that's not a good way of doing it.
We table this and bring it to the next meeting.
We could.
I would make a motion that we would table the minutes.
As long as
until
you do that.
The next meeting, where the corrections could be completed and written into the amended minutes, that at which time they would be further reviewed and approved.
I second that.
Second? Okay. Any other discussion? All right. So we are now taking roll call on the minutes as presented.
To be tabled.
Okay. May I have a motion to approve to table?
We just did that.
We did.
We got the
You've got his whole thing? Second, we're good.
So we're ready to go.
Roll call.
Mr. Alger.
Yes.
Mr. Boczynski.
Yes.
Mrs. Clark.
Yes.
Mr. Escalante.
Yes.
Yes. Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Mr.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Thanks, Stephanie. Superintendent's recommendation, resolution and appointment of school district treasurer. Illinois school code requires that the Board of Education appoint a school district treasurer and requires that the school treasurer be properly bonded. Due to the recent resignation of Assistant Superintendent of Finance, Facilities, and Operations, Bob Cicerella, Superintendent Paul Gordon will be named in this role until a permanent replacement is found. May I have a motion to approve resolution of the appointment of school district treasurer?
Motion.
Second. Discussion.
I think this is going to be, we'll appoint Paul as the treasurer until we find a permanent replacement. That's the idea. So mm-hmm. this is just going to get us through the interim, and we need to have someone be assigned as a treasurer. So that's what this is about.
Yeah.
And this is more of a perfunctory thing than anything, because we need to appoint someone. And we have not identified that interim person. Hmm.
Yes, I will own that aspect of the role that Bob used to hold, but I don't think it's a perfunctory thing. It's a very, very important role that we have somebody bonded and ensure that the district is taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
But I absolutely get what you're saying.
Eric, I had one question that I'm not sure. Finance, the Treasury, I just wanted to make sure. I know we've had a couple of issues with payroll over the last year or two. With Bob leaving, how are we feeling good about making sure that those don't happen?
We are. I feel very good. We've actually interviewed Lori and I, an interim individual with a tremendous amount of experience who will add to the team downstairs and will continue moving us forward.
And they'll be on a daily rate, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So we find a permanent replacement.
Correct.
Good question. Okay. Anything else?
I don't know if I'm comfortable with this. I don't know if you're having too many C-level hats. I'm not sure what the treasurer and superintendent can do without knowledge to anybody else. I'm not saying you would. I'm just saying...
Is there a check and balance?
Yes. And I don't know if that's there, if we tap you on this. Now, I don't know if we're forced to do it because we have no one else.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody who does risk management, I don't know if I'm... I don't know what you can do with both sides of your head.
Bob, do you want to speak a little bit about your role with as the treasurer and what does that look like?
Actually,
from
can
your
I, can I ask that differently, Paul?
Please.
You're leaving, Bob, so you have no skin in this game.
Right.
Can you tell me what Paul could do as both treasurer and superintendent?
Probably the same amount of things that I can do now.
Yeah. Probably. If by Illinois school code, you have to have someone named as a treasurer. Yeah. It's not typically someone outside of the district, but rather an administrator of the district. And really, Paul's responsibilities are he becomes the second or another signature on the checking accounts. You're going to have an interim person in my position.
I'm sorry, Paul. Bob. Paul can sign checks and secondary check?
Well, we have two signatures on our checks.
Right.
So Dean and Paul will be signing checks now. And then the checks are not released until the board fully approves them, so they don't go out until after they have the review process. And this is just really a protection that's required by the Illinois School Code. You're required to bond your treasurer to 25% of sort of your maximum fund balances at any time of the year. So we have about a $4.5 million treasurer's bond, and it's really just to protect the district should anything out of the ordinary occur. That's the role of the treasurer and a treasurer's bond that you're going to be approving.
So if you're checking balance, today it's us, tomorrow it's us. It's still a board member and an administrator. And then you have to, all of us, have to approve the checkers.
And you can enter into any activities as superintendent and treasurer without board approval.
$10,000.
We're still bound by the other policies.
We're still
bound by our normal policies.
Mm-hmm.
Can a board member do that?
I've never heard of it. I've heard of superintendents being the treasurer in this size.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of a board member being the treasurer.
I'm not looking for the job.
I just don't believe it.
Well, it's that internal needing to have that day-to-day connection, right, which is why it's an administrator, because we're not in that day-to-day. I mean, Dean serves in that role as secretary in order to be a board contact. So,
I have two things.
Mm-hmm.
One is we're also approving a bond, which you stated, which protects us
yes.
if there's fraud or something.
Right.
Okay. So we do have this insurance policy.
Well, 25%.
25%, $4.5 million. And then my second thing is a question. I have a question. When this temporary interim person comes, do you foresee them being the signatory or are you staying?
I would stay on until we hire a full-time, permanent individual.
Yeah,
understood. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Can we increase the bond?
You can't. This is just standard boilerplate language that we use.
I mean, just as...
An insurance company would probably be happy to sell you the bigger bond.
I knew the answer to that.
That would be a kind of
question. All right. Can I ask for this to be voted on tonight and then voted on in 6 months?
Mm. Oh. So we are going to take action tonight because he's leaving?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, we can come back to it.
No. I mean, I'm fine with that, but can we have another review in 6 months?
Well, actually, I would think that when we locate and find a replacement for Bob, if it's earlier than 6 months, which I certainly hope it is, then we would want to do it then.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We want to do it then.
But I recognize what you're asking for.
Yeah. We come back to it.
Just a clarifying question. Normally, this is done on an annual basis.
Right.
So, but there wouldn't... There's no reason that we couldn't do an amendment to our motion that we're approving this for a 6-month time frame.
We're buying a bond for a year, though, right?
Yeah, you are.
Until June 30th, 2016.
Couldn't we always, just to go through your points, couldn't we always come in and say, you know what, let's undo this motion and Paul.
Absolutely.
We have a motion where Paul can.
We did it now.
Yeah. Right.
We did it now.
So we're just, when we hired
that. Exactly what we just did.
Yeah. But I hear what you're saying, Patrick. I think it's a fair question.
Can we
just
ask a question in finance in 6 months, then?
Yes.
Put on your agenda.
Put on the agenda.
Okay.
Well, we did. I mean, it's an important question in that we did. I mean, and again, I say we as, you know, I was pretty much not part of it, but we did kind of forget some language with summer construction and granting permission to, you know, not picking on Bob, but to Bob, and that was kind of left open. And I know it's a year, but I mean, you're fairly confident if we hire somebody, let's say it's in 6 months, that we would visit this anyway.
Oh yes,
okay.
Yeah, yes, because I want
we'll
it
go back.
Back to that position.
Yeah,
I'm not dying to have this.
But once again, we have the power to do that.
You do. Mm-hmm. The board has the power to move that.
We have to remember it, though. That's the
I made a note.
So 6 months, we'd come back and review.
Okay, great. Thank you. Roll call.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Buchholz?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Alters?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. Board policy and procedure revisions in our board packet we received. Yep. This is the first reading and adoption. The Board of Education Policy Committee examines policies and procedures that have been updated as a result of changes in Illinois or federal law that require revisions in order for the district to be compliant or to reflect current policy and/or practices. Further, these items are aligned to new procedures we are in the process of implementing related to increasing the safety and security of our students and families. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Discussion? So, again, this is in our...
Normally, we would bring in a first reading,
uh-huh.
and then we would discuss it, and then the next meeting we'd do an adoption. The reason we're doing that on these policies, so you guys know why Stephanie and I aren't doing that in the normal way, is that some of these have to do with the start of school and some of the changes we made for visitors to the school.
Right.
So we want to get these in place. You've all had these in front of you now for a while. I think they went out over the last 2 weeks.
Right.
And these are things like the Raptor program and other items that we need. It's a housekeeping thing that we need to get it done tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Is that...
That's accurate.
Yep.
That makes sense.
And I actually had a question that came up to me today, which I just thought of like today. So, and I don't know that this changes any of this,
yeah.
But in the 6250 AP talking about securing and securing volunteers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was trying to like read through it right now real quickly. Do we have, I'm wondering, especially with Raptor being, you know, mm-hmm. do we have anything in the policy as far as, you know, what is the volunteer shows up to school and they don't have their wallet or their purse or their ID or they have no way to get screened. Does it say like you absolutely can't get in or is there like
no.
a, do we have a little
we do. We can actually type in the person's name and ask them to give us their address and we can run it that way.
Okay.
Again, if nothing else comes through that, then we're going to have a few more questions, but we will definitely work with people. And the buildings last year, well, Hadley last year piloted it for us, and they ran into those a couple times, and we reached out, and they're like, no, if you just type in the name and ask for the address, and if they match, you're good. Give them a print off the visitor ID badge, and we move forward.
Do they have to be screened one time first before you can do that?
Like that would be the screening time.
Okay.
That would be their screening.
So if
screening,
you don't show up with
screening.
Your license, there is a procedure where you could actually get in.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We might have had a little breakdown on that today, but
did we?
I think a little one. We can talk
okay.
about that later. But yeah, so that's why I wanted
to get
breakdown.
Kicked out.
No. They just had to get their license, like go
okay.
get their sister.
It involved my daughter.
Yeah.
We attended Lincoln School.
So the process is, I don't have my driver's license or whatever. I can walk mm-hmm. in the building and say, you guys know who I am. My name is Joe Patinsky. I live on Main Street. You guys go, oh, yeah, Joe, you're here.
I apologize. He'll bring up a picture. So you're like, hmm, you two don't look alike. You're a little taller than this individual.
Why would you reimburse to
go through?
Yeah, I don't think you can cover.
I'll reach out to my expert in the crowd, anybody with the rep. But if, what I've been...
You can manually input the names.
Yeah, and it comes up with the picture, so you do. I appreciate that. Next level of question. Because you and Joe look exactly alike. Good question. Good question. Now I can knock the raptor piece.
Well, and again, it's the first day of school, so there's a thousand things going on, and you know, once it gets into place, then I think people, they'll be used to it in a week, hopefully.
So, great question.
Right. Thank you. Roll call.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mr. Alter?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Item 3 is STEM Sculpt Curriculum Resources. At the August 10, 2015 meeting, the board discussed the administration recommendation to approve the purchase of STEM Sculpt Curriculum Resources in the amount of $25,125.50 for year one, which includes launch training. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion.
I wasn't at the meeting last week when the report came out, but I did go through and listen to the audio, and I think I took about 4 or 5 pages of notes during this section because I was fascinated with it. It looks like a very good program to me. At the kickoff at Hadley last week, I think it was last week, Wednesday, Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Happened to sit at a table with some teachers I didn't know, and we started talking, and they brought this up and talked about how excited they were to get going on it. I asked them if they were on the committee that came up with this, and they weren't. But they wanted me to tell the rest of you that there are people at multiple buildings who want this. So now I'm relating that to you from the conversations from them, that they're pretty jazzed about getting going on this, and we're really looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Any comments?
I asked the question last time to Karen, and I'll be a stickler as long as I'm on the board that when we approve these kinds of curriculum things, unless I start to see how we're going to measure it over the next year or two ahead of time, not after we've done it, I'm just not going to vote to approve any money to do it. Because I just think I've seen time after time after time in this district. We've spent money on things. They maybe didn't work out for whatever reason, but they just kind of go away, and we spent a lot of money on it. Nobody really says anything, but it was taxpayer dollars and it was unsuccessful. And again, back to what I said were board goals. We have to hold the superintendent accountable, and that means the superintendent's holding his staff accountable. So again, unless something's changed over the last couple of weeks where we've got definitive parameters as to how, and again, I don't do this for a living, but you guys know how to measure this stuff. If we've got those things that I can go back in a year and say, hey, did we meet these measurements? Did this, was this successful to us? I just won't approve. I won't vote in favor of it.
Thank you.
I was going to say something similar. I was curious how we're going to evaluate it to be sure it's an investment we want to continue. I mean, I know we piloted it with some of the teachers already, but you know, once we go large scale, evaluate it from all the teachers. And I mean, I don't think I've seen this in the past, but I would be curious when we do things like this. You know, this is going to be an investment every year. Since if we move forward with it and it's the first year we're doing it, you know, maybe we could have a process where this come back to the board for an update and like reapproval or affirmation, like yes, this is an investment we want to continue, just to make sure we're holding ourselves accountable and truly evaluating when we do make a big investment in something like this. I think, you know, I would like to see that in place. My second thought on it is, I do think we're losing a little time on this by not introducing it till the Institute Day in October. And, you know, moving forward, I don't know if there's lessons learned. We've obviously, we're testing it out throughout the school year. But I think, to the point made earlier in public participation, that it would have been nice if we could figure out a way to move forward with this and have it ready to go for teachers day one so they can tie it into everything they were doing day one. Obviously, we can't change what's happening now. I do worry about the money that I'm trying. In my head right now, I'm weighing the time that's lost of our investment of this year with our kind of delayed launch, but also, you know, I want to take into account, is it something that the teachers, you know, want and can use as a resource even without that. But moving forward when we're doing things like this, I think to get the most of our investment, we need to be planning ahead and be ready to go day one, first day of school. And I think that's helpful for the teachers as well and get the most for what we're doing with them.
Well, I guess I would ask a question on this. So in the report last week, and this has to do with some of the comment earlier, the new teachers that were represented at all grade levels, again, this is on the board report, it's the second paragraph under discussion, began deconstructing the new standards in June 2013, so a year ago. Curriculum development began in January 2014, and that's going to continue through this academic year. So the way I'm reading this, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the deconstruction of the standards happened. Curriculum had started to be developed a whole year ago, so there is curriculum in place aligned with STEM scopes, and that curriculum will be continue to be developed. So they have curriculum they're using. Correct.
Yeah, the science classes are continuing.
Right.
With the curriculum that Karen and the teachers have been working on.
Right.
Sorry.
Curriculum's aligned to the MGSS.
Correct.
Right. Right. I get it. And that STEM scopes is this aligned.
It's a resource.
For that, because it is aligned to the next generation science standards and it has Common Core alignment as well, correct? Because that's what I heard the teacher say last or 2 weeks ago when they were here. So it started 2 years ago, there is curriculum in place, and they're going to continue to do that development with their planning time. Mm-hmm. But to Stephanie's point, and I think this is just a function of our calendar, right? It's doing that launch training then holistically for everybody on October 1st. Because that is October 13th, rather, that, but I'm thinking Institute Day, so it's our Institute Day, right? But this is not precluding people from applying it, using it.
Correct. The elementary teachers are starting out with their engineering unit, which is the EIE, which was
correct, yeah.
Last year.
Yeah.
And we did talk about kind of bringing this forward in June, trying to kind of rush it, but to train teachers then. And then not use it in the summer, even though some may choose to plan and work with it. Using an Institute Day allows us to train a large number of people on that day without carrying them out of the classroom. And then it's what we kind of call that just-in-time training. And then go ahead and use it. Even if that unit, they don't intend to teach it for a while. Mm-hmm. But I think Deb spoke to it too. It was pretty intuitive and user friendly. And as soon as she had access, she was able to start using the components of it.
Right. Deb Lazaret from Churchill. Mm-hmm. Right.
And that launch training is in part of its cost.
Yeah, correct. It's included.
Yeah. And it's a one time cost. Yeah.
Correct.
Correct.
Cost. We'll go down.
Right.
Paul, remind me, this is pilot testing. We talked about that.
This was
teachers talked about.
Yes, teacher stuff.
Was that prior to pilot testing? Was it discussed at our level or was it discussed?
STEM scopes last year. I think it was just discussed at Karen's level.
Okay. And it was pilot tested, and then we did get feedback at the last meeting of how the pilot
correct.
Test went.
Mm-hmm.
So
correct.
It was positive. So, in a way, what Stephanie was asking for, we sort of got it.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, you pilot tested it, and we got some feedback, and continual feedback is either through Karen or through the teachers is a wise thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So
no, I think so.
I agree with that.
Well, they also
took.
Yeah, I was going to say that was the other thing you said. So, you know, again, to the point of that kind of measure, the team comes back together, and they're always getting feedback on how is the unit going. I mean, that's part of our SIP days, the school improvement planning days, so that they're coming together as grade levels and levels to do that.
The way I look at this, you know, just from other businesses that do similar things, I mean, mm-hmm. over time. Other products come out there. And what I wouldn't want to happen is that we're saying, you know, in 2 years, ABC product comes out and we're like shy to go do it because then we'd say STEM scopes didn't do its job. But that doesn't, I mean, that's not how it works in life.
I didn't say that.
No, I didn't say you did. I want to be careful that we're not doing that. I didn't say Kurt said this. I just want to make sure we're not sitting in as a group. Because the other things, the new improved stem scopes, may be the best thing out there, but there may be a competitor that comes up with something better. Unfortunately, when that happens, there may be additional costs for training, and we have to recognize that. Mm-hmm. But just my take on that.
I just want to piggyback on something that Stephanie said. You know, in terms of in a year from now, how are you going to come back to this group and say, very happy, not so happy, you know, get in some sort of report with some, you know, some data that would just inform us kind of how the year went with his product. Mm-hmm. Is that a
yeah, absolutely. Product? We can have Karen bring her that team back again to give the board an update. I think that's very reasonable. And
well, like all teachers who teach science will have access to it over the course of this year, so we can get that feedback from.
Does that answer?
Yeah.
No, and remember, the STEM scopes, again, is a resource. And it's tied to, I mean, this is the thing that I took away from 2 weeks ago. Because it's tied to the standards, the measures are implicit. So if it's, you know, if it's tied to the standard, then we're going to be assessing those as we go along, because that's what they're assessed on locally. You know, the math assessments get aligned to that, too. And then you know, you see, how is this helping to improve? But I think what I hear us saying as a board is be conscious of coming back earlier than later. Mm-hmm. Is what I'm hearing. Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, I think for this, I mean, in the first year, there's really aren't the tests coming in for fifth and eighth grade, and we won't really have much to compare to. So there won't be a lot of test data, but I think it's more
anecdotal.
User and those local science assessments that we have in the classrooms. Yeah.
But you know, and just you know, just to clarify, like when I said that we've lost time, I know that we already have the curriculum, but yeah. I just think it's unfortunate that you know, planning wise, and that's why could we maybe lesson learned for the future where the teachers could have had access to it. You know, day one or earlier, so they could. I know it's a resource; it's not the curriculum, but you know they're losing time and prepping for the year. And I just think to get the most of our investment.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's that balance of how big is the pilot? You know, who wants to be involved? You know, that's a question. All right. Okay. Thank you. All right. Roll call, please.
Mr. Buckle?
No.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Thank you. Item 4, fire alarm panel replacement at Hadley Junior High School. Hadley Junior High recently experienced a weather-related event that damaged the central fire panel system, which is now recommended to be replaced. Dr. Gordon notified the board on Friday, August 15, 2015, with the details of this emergent expenditure with anticipation of approval at tonight's meeting. The total cost for replacement of the system is $21,780 and includes all required MAP net cards, power supply, and installation. I have a motion to approve the fire alarm panel replacement at Hadley Junior High School, recommendation as presented.
Motion. Second.
Discussion.
So one thing I want to address early, Kurt, you brought it up in Finance Committee, the timeline, and I didn't have the sitting right there, so I went back, looked at the timeline of events. So the situation occurred where we think it was a power surge on Monday evening. Dave was notified on Tuesday. At that time, they asked us, you know, what are the next steps? We asked for them to start looking into replacement parts. By Wednesday, they were telling us, this is what replacement parts, because your system is so old, your replacement parts will cost X, Y, and Z, and we can't guarantee that if you fix this, if you put this one card in, five other things won't go wrong with your panel. Mm-hmm. So that was done on Wednesday. Thursday, I was notified. Thursday, I was driving out to Kansas for my daughter. So that was that delay, is that one day delay where I sent it to the board. I did not send a text message on that one. It was on a different piece. So I apologize for stating that. So the first communication was Friday on that piece. It was a delay of one day because of my travels out to, but I wanted to make sure that I sat with Dave and got the timeline together. It really was about the decision. The decision that slowed us down a little bit was, do we replace the whole panel, or would it be financially prudent to just replace parts of it? And it came out that it was more financially prudent to replace the whole panel. So sorry to jump into your discussion, but I wanted to make sure Kurt's question earlier was addressed.
Great, thank you.
You know, Paul, I don't question your decision. I think this is the right decision. I know in your text to us, you said that you were going to look into the possibility of some insurance coverage.
Yes, and that's been submitted. Look over, is the insurance been submitted for this?
No, we're still waiting for all the final paperwork.
Okay, thank you.
But
so it will be.
We will pursue this because theoretically it shouldn't cost us much other than the deductible on our insurance.
In a similar situation, the insurance covered it. But for me to sit here and say that the insurance is going to cover it, I would be putting myself way out there.
No, I understand. I just want to make sure that.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Pursue that piece and not let that drop.
Bob and his team are following through with that and submitting the proper paperwork at the right time.
And when you replace it, Drew, you will be the experts will be able to tell you, potentially tell you what caused it. But since the system is still somewhat running with its existing problems, because it's still in use right now, as we sit here, they couldn't know what the ultimate cause was.
Well, it sounded like it was a lightning strike.
Based on the nature of the email, not being an expert, I agree with you, but the experts will.
Right, yeah. So, okay. Granted.
Thank
but
you.
We're not going to list the insurance end of it.
And then this has been discussed in finance?
Okay,
so you guys have vetted it out.
Mm-hmm. I'm still confused on one thing, though, because we got an email. Did the text go out or no?
On this one, it did not. I reached back out because I was like, because I was
just
looking.
That email Friday.
It was just that email.
So
and that's,
Joe, when he thought he got a text from me,
it was the other one.
It was a ghost message.
Yeah.
It was a ghost message.
Because I have not received any text from you in August at all. So I don't know. If
yeah.
Even if there was a text, I didn't get it. So.
Okay. No, it was the email
I got it
on Friday.
On the phone.
Because Joe was telling me what my phone should do, and he's the one who's
got
the phone.
I'm not
all right, thank you.
So with this, during Illinois, for the parts or for the labor? So for the parts, under Illinois law, we don't go for bid. They did reach out. I'm going to look over. We did reach out to.
The equipment itself is proprietary, so we have to buy the Simplex panel. So we did get a second price quote for the labor through Simplex, and they were like $2,100 higher than Correct.
Okay. So we did.
Correct is a certified installer for Simplex.
I just have one question. I was reading through the update for Hadley Fire Panel update. You indicated that you had Brian Crowley from Frantic. Did you talk to him about this, or was this just something passing?
This was a relationship to something Bob had been speaking to him about, and then he mentioned just saying, you know, remember, this is not something you need to. That wasn't in my reach out.
That wasn't a billable minute.
No, I don't believe that was a billable minute. That was a, hey, just make sure. Thank you.
Just want to make sure.
Now that one.
All right.
Because I couldn't figure out, I couldn't have imagined that you would have called him over that.
Yeah.
So,
no.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Clark.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Mr. Buckle.
Yes.
Mr. Aldrin.
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Brochinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Okay. Annual review of closed session minutes. We're tabling both of these. Is that correct? Okay. The board is required to semi-annually review all closed session minutes and determine if the need for confidentiality still exists as to all or those or part of those minutes. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to continue to keep all closed session minutes from February 2015 through June 2015 closed? Yeah. But I don't need to close out this action and go to table. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So then I will read that, and then I'll read the second one. Item 6 is destruction of closed meeting audio recordings. The board is also required to semi-annually review closed meeting audio recordings that are at least 18 months old and for which approved minutes of the closed session already exist. Please note that the October 28, 2013 session was recorded properly. However, it was not transferred correctly from tape to CD, and as a result, the CD is blank. In both of these both of these items, the board is tabling these for the next meeting in order to have further review. All right. Okay. Thank you. Superintendent's report.
Okay. Today was our first day of school. It was a fantastic day weather-wise, and seeing all the kids coming in with their parents, it really was a wonderful day at each of the buildings. I was fortunate enough to make it to all the buildings, not for that one special moment of everybody coming in, but able to stop by and see the schools in action for a few moments. It was so impressive to see the instruction was starting on day one, and teachers were going. They in Mrs. Gail Nelson's class, and she's there reading the story, and the kids are just mesmerized by her and her storytelling abilities. Down in Mrs. Lori Barenshaw's classroom, they were already outside doing science project. It was just really cool to see that we're learning, kids are engaged, and teachers are just doing a wonderful job of greeting along with all of our other staff. I just really appreciate all the staff and creating a real welcoming atmosphere. I was in the office at a number of our buildings, and all the different questions that were coming up from parents around, you know, where do I go, and kids. And there was a few tears. There's always a few tears on first day, and teachers just being able to reach out and say, come on with me, and helping out. So just wanted to thank everybody for making today a really special day. It means so much to our parents and to our kids. Able to talk to a number of parents before school and after school. And it really does. With the cameras, these are Kodak moments, and they're important. So I just appreciate everybody. I appreciate the CSO staff going over to our buildings to support the buildings. Denise from our front office, I was over at Hadley. And Hadley, it's always busy. But she was in there. She was answering phone calls. She was allowing the other staff to work directly with the kids while she worked the phone. So thanks to everybody for helping out. Appreciate the parent comments tonight on the elementary schedule and their perspective on that elementary schedule. As I said earlier, we'll be reaching out to those who spoke tonight about our schedule and where we're at with it. And looking at that lunch piece, where does it fit? We have transition times that were not built into the 50 minutes in years past. We built those on the outside to make it the 45 minutes, but I also recognize it's tough. It's tough getting kids in, tough getting kids out, especially on the first day. You always have that situation on that first day. I was at Churchill, monitored lunch, our largest school with the most amount of students eating. Kids were eating, they were chit-chatting, and they were moving along. Did we have some kids at the very end not finishing that time? Yes. But what all schools do today and every day is ensure that the kids eat. And then they transition them back into the classroom. Other cool thing, just a side note, at Churchill, for the first time, kids were playing out on that large, expansive, it's not the greatest grass in the world, but there's some greenery out there. But for the first time in years, Scott said, because any other years, it used to be so deep, that's not where kids went. But there was kids playing all kinds of activities down there. It was really fantastic to see and spread out. So even though the facilities, the classrooms get most of the recognition, and rightfully so, that extra space at Churchill is huge. And it really made a difference. I just noticed it today outside with Scott, seeing the kids on the playground, seeing the kids at the on the grass. So that's a great thing for our kids to have. Raptor screening, spoke about it a little bit. Just it's important with the it's in response to our Illinois school code that all visitors, doesn't matter who you are, board members, community members, Parents, we will scan you generally with your license or other forms of ID. We'll ensure that those pieces are attached to you generally with a lanyard. We'll put the visitor ID badge right in there. The other piece is it's really nice for safety for any staff member in the building to be looking over and just say, hey, you might want to run back down to the office, make sure you get checked in. Continues to be, it's about the safety of our kids when they check in and as they're walking throughout the building. It's just an important piece for us to continue working on. Task force, we had over 30 community members join us. It had great turnout. Fortunately, we were cut short by a tornado in the area. It was nice. Pete Latisek had a direct connection. Kurt had a direct connection to the chief, so he was able to tell us, yeah, it's going until about 8:30, and then once we thought we were going to have it all clear, they said, ooh, we have another one coming at 9 o'clock, and we decided to shut it down and move forward. But the energy in the room was fantastic, and what Erica and I stressed to the committee, that this was the community's opportunity to give their perspective on the facilities issues that are facing District 41. You know, we made tremendous progress with our portables and removing those and bringing them, the students inside. And again, the teacher today at Churchill said, I've been in portables for the last 10 years. Wow. Thank you. Thank you for bringing us in. So that was nice to hear. But we still have 10 portables at Hadley. And then we still have the questions around full-day kindergarten. That still remains a question if and or how the district will support full-day kindergarten and ensure that core space at each of our buildings is not overtaxed. And that's an important one, especially as I was sitting there watching Churchill. We can keep adding kids to Churchill, but their lunchroom, that thing is packed. It was really interesting to see how kids were flowing through there. Just the transitional pieces as well, sometimes we don't remember, but kids coming to and from and getting everybody in those hallways, just something interesting to think about. So I really appreciate that committee coming together. Our next meeting, September 3rd, 7 o'clock, here at CSO. No, Hadley. I knew I was going to get some part of that messed up. At Hadley. So September 3rd, 7 o'clock, at Hadley.
How does that work, Paul? Does that re-invite those 30 communities?
Yeah, they're welcome to come, and we continue to add a few more people if they want to join us. So it's really, as Erica said, and she said it beautifully, one of the first times that either her or I have ever been to had a committee where it's truly open. No one's being selected. It is wide open to the community to join and participate. And I think that's why we had a really nice, diverse cross-section of the community. Mm-hmm. A number of people who have 2 and 3 year olds, and a number of people who do not have kids in the system, or who've never had kids in the system, but are just community members, taxpayers, who want their voice heard. So it was really nice. Last piece of work is on the District 41 long range plan, and I spoke about this briefly. The current long range plan is due for a renewal. Be working with the board on setting up a special workshop to really have that in-depth conversation, looking at the current long-range plan, and then getting the board's input on what are those next steps and what are your views on that long-range plan. So Nancy and I will be sending out some dates in the coming days, weeks.
It'll be helpful, too, also to, I'm sure you're going to do this, but I just want to put it out there, to send us, again, current state, and then also just remind us to go back into the contract to see what's the protocol for that, just so that we remember how that all works. So that'll be good.
That's it.
Okay, thank you. Board reports. Well, we talked a little bit about August 20th. Have a board report, but the person that it's about just walked out of the room. So, Bob?
Probably I had the same thing, but
come back to him. Thank you, Erica.
In the meantime, I'll give a from Finance Committee.
Great.
Today at 6:30. We talked about one of our items. It was the fire alarm. The other item we had on our agenda was the request for qualification for architectural services. That process is starting.
this week. So we're going to get legal notice. That's the first step in that process. The hope and the goal, the timeline that was put forth was our first meeting in November to have approval of an architect of record for the district. I mean, it will be the same one, but we have an architect of record. That date's not set in stone, but that was the timeline we set, that was set forth at that meeting. One other item we discussed under the other items was Lori gave a presentation to us, a quick one about the TRS comparables. We had all sent her some data. It was decided that there were 10 districts that at least four or more of us selected. She's now got the challenge of going out and getting the data from those 10 districts. So we didn't deviate from the methodology of choosing four. We, as a group here, sent us four or more. Now it came up to the number of 10. So that's our report.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thanks to Finance Committee again, too. Okay, welcome back, Bob. You're my board report tonight.
And you were part of mine, but you walked out.
You walked out.
Yes, I didn't go on
there. Remember, we are live streaming.
Board humor. 8 years ago, this is the start of the ninth year, Bob Cicerella was hired by District 41 to become its Assistant Superintendent for Finance and Facilities. The very first thing Bob did when he arrived was to do an absolutely discreet walk and assessment of all of our school property and buildings, as Bob likes to call it, our assets. And for the first time, the district really had a very well thought out age and obsolescence plan in terms of the property that we own and all the assets that are in the buildings, from carpets to chairs to Elmos and computers and all those things, but also took a look at how are we using our facilities. And that alone set the district in a direction to really become much more thoughtful and proactive about thinking about facilities as part of a whole and not just separate individual buildings. And so what I wanted to say tonight, Bob, as you leave us on August 31st, is how much of a difference you've made in District 41, and in particular just the value that you've brought to how well kept our buildings are. And just a quick example today, I didn't start work until 10 o'clock today, so I had a chance to walk over to Churchill and just see the buzz over there as well. And got to talk to one of the custodians, actually, in the hallway. And he talked about how it's everybody that is involved in making the buildings work, and he included you and your staff in that as well. So you have left an imprint on the district. I don't know that we always recognize that when we leave an organization, but I want to tell you that since I was on the board when you first started, and to thank you for your level of commitment and passion for making this a better place. Now, I ordered you 2 weeks ago a golden hammer from a little company that sells goofy things like that, but it has not arrived. So I am hoping it comes by Thursday or Friday, and I'll make sure I bring it over or ship it to your new place. So, Bob, thank you very much.
Bob, I would agree with everything you said. I just want to thank you for 2 years with me. I appreciate your time, your dedication. You were always, always advocating for the school district, for students, for what's right. So I appreciate all your work. You're taking on a similar role in another district, but you've been an integral part of our district for the past 8 years. You've overseen construction. I mean, real tangible aspects of our district, Hadley, the library, the classrooms that are occurring in our finances for many years. So I want to thank you for everything that you've given to our district. So I appreciate your time and good luck. And you have all of our support as you move on to your next journey. So thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Upcoming meetings, September 14, 2015, the Board of Education regular meeting at 7:30 in the Central Services office. I do want to invite everybody at 7 o'clock to an informal reception for the new staff members that are here in the district, of which there are, what, 23? Did we end up with 25 about? Yeah, so some great new staff members who are all in place. So 7 to 7:30 will be our reception right here. September 28th, 2015, the Board of Education regular meeting at 7:30. Please note that is being held at Abraham Lincoln School. So make a note, get it on your calendars. I know that we have ours on our Google calendar. Yep. But for the rest of the community and those who are watching live stream, it'll be at Lincoln School, 7:30. We have two items under other. The first one is a community finance task force discussion, and I'll turn to either Kurt or Stephanie to talk a little bit about that. Community finance task force.
It's something that the Park District does. We've talked to some people over there, and it's not new to them. It's something that's been done throughout America through districts. But we have a lot of talented people in our community, and it'd be nice to get some volunteers, a group of 8 to 10 people within our community that have finance backgrounds. I do not. I'm not a finance community. I have a marketing background, but. We could task them with taking a look at various things that I know finance committee can look at, but I'm not sure even on finance committee. As I said, in finance committee, I know Patrick has a finance background. I'm not sure about Joe, but I certainly don't. So at least one of the three people sitting on finance committee does not have that. And, I just think it would be another avenue to involve some people within our community, especially some people that really pay attention, to dollars each day, and that we can task them with some things. Patrick brought up some investment ideas for Bob. That's something we could task, group of 8 or 9 really smart people in our community to look at and say, how are our investments? What things could we do within the guidelines of the Illinois Code? Mm-hmm. What kinds of things, task them with taking a look at our budget and seeing where are items that we can reduce. Task them with taking a look at, how well we're producing with some of the things that we're doing within our budget. So that's why, I think, and there's going to be other things that would come up, at various points, and maybe they get together once a month or once every quarter or whatever. Would be the thought process to that. So mm-hmm. that was the thought process we're taking into that.
Thank you. Comments?
I think it's a good idea. Mm-hmm. I think he brings up a good point in that there are probably a lot of other good ideas that we can get out of the community. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if we should wait until we get a replacement for Bob before we start with that together, so that person can work with them a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I don't see any reason why we shouldn't do something like this going forward. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In your vision of this, Kurt and Stephanie, is it just a month or a quarter?
Yeah, I mean,
just so you have 8 or 10 members or so, and they can pick a topic in a quarter and they can digest it and then kind of figure out maybe there's some solutions, maybe what the district's doing is good, and then we'll report that. Is that kind of thing? Okay. And I'm just envisioning, I think it's a great idea too, and I'm all for it. I'm envisioning it that it's almost like you have 10 chairs around the table, and maybe there's topics that certain people can sit in on for one quarter, and then another, some people stay there, but some new people may come on, or it's not a consistent with the same people, but you may have 4 or 5 that are consistently on it. And you draw, and I like the idea. I like what you described. I like adding that people are kind of, I don't want to call it musical chairs, but people are rotating in and out because it brings more community members mm-hmm. to the discussion. That's an added value, and I agree with Kurt, but there's many more experts out there, especially in the finance field, that live in this community. So, and in your point about waiting till the replacement, I tend to agree with that because I see that replacement, that role here being somebody that's in those meetings mm-hmm. and getting them the data they want and maybe explaining some of the state statute around financing for school, which is a lot different than what people are used to.
Mm-hmm. And maybe there's some things we can do in the meantime with trying to see what kind of interests there are in the community.
Do it now.
Kind of
start.
Yeah, get a base to go over.
See
what we can hit the ground running.
Yeah.
I want to jump in.
Speak up just a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wanted to come in both feet and say, you know, I think this is a great idea. We actually had one. And I think it was actually called that. It was the Financial Task Force. I think it was about 2 years ago, and Bob kind of started it up. Yeah, John Moharen was on that. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, it just kind of never got off the ground. I would love to see it, put some new life into it. I think there's a huge amount of resources in terms of financial resources with and the knowledge base that resides within this community, and it's crazy not to have that. Mm-hmm. So I'm all for it.
I concur. I think it was further than 2 years ago. I think it was a little bit further. It was three or four, I think. And I think a part of it, and this is what I hear us, you know, thinking about differently, is that the mission of the task force wasn't as clarified as it needed to be. And I think that's true with anything. If you don't have the objectives in place, then, and especially with volunteers, people want to know, what's the beginning, what's the end? I'm putting my time into this. What am I truly supposed to do? So I think, we'll do a good job of that. In fact, this was when I went back. I knew that we had this other task force, but also in Dr. Gordon's evaluation under next steps and ideas, this is listed in there. So it really is a part of some of the things that we had Paul thinking about as well. Timing, I think, is everything. We have both Paul and Erica focused now on the facilities task force.
Yep.
And so, I don't know that it, again, it's aligning to the needs of the district. So, having that permanent replacement for Bob's position, I think, is going to be the key to this. And that person may have already had this at the district they come from, or, have already done this. And so they're going to have a kind of a picture in mind anyway. So that would be great. But I do like the idea of even just, fishing around for some interest with the recognition that it wouldn't be fully on until we get, somebody new in and let them get settled in. So we have a lot going on in the district. This task force right now is really important to be focused and get things done on, but it sounds like there's consensus that we want this to go forward. And I would agree. I think it's a great idea.
And maybe even, again, mindful of staff being busy, but our staff can contact the Park District staff and maybe see what their framework is. Give us kind of a starting point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, District 87 also has finance too, and which was the group their most mission was looking at facilities in order to put together their recent referendum. So
we're reachable.
Yeah, very focused. Good. Thank you very much.
If this is something like if you want to discuss or if staff has questions, what is it something we could put on the finance maybe agenda? Mm-hmm. Would that be an appropriate place to have discussions about it moving forward?
Sure, yeah, because it's going
to
live there.
To be planning.
Mm-hmm. I do think that's appropriate. I think it's, if you made it, and I'm kind of addressing Joe as a finance chair, put this as an action item for ongoing follow-up.
Sounds like a good idea. Mm-hmm.
Can you do that, Joe?
Yeah,
that'd be great. Good, thank you. All right. Last item is this community survey. So this was a question to have under other in terms of some discussion about the community surveys, particularly school perceptions. So I'll let Stephanie, you had sent me an email, and Paul an email about this.
I guess kind of in looking through the history of our survey with school perceptions, the original, the board never approved a survey moving forward. It was just the administration moved forward because it was less than $10,000. And I feel like if this is something that we're going to do continually, a continual investment, the BOE, I feel like we're kind of responsible to gather feedback from the community. And I feel like the board should be approving or
an overall plan should be presented, including survey details, timelines, and costs. Really, if you look back, I guess one thing, you know, I want to share one quick thing too. Bear with me, it's going to take 5 minutes because I have more details on that. But, you know, a lot of the I think a piece that we're missing in our district is the feedback from the teachers and the parents. And I know we had a lot of parents show up tonight to talk about the start of school and kind of some confusion on things that are going on. And, you know, one of my concerns that ties into why I think a survey is so important and why I feel we really need a solid plan with the details that are presented, and we haven't really been given that, is there's an article, like I said, this is taking 5 minutes, I'll be quick. Erica, I can forward this to you,
yeah.
Forward to the board, but there's a recent article in the Huffington Post that I wanted to share, and the article was 10 signs your child is in a failing school district. And the article states it has nothing to do with test scores and state mandates and standardized tests,
mm-hmm.
and more to do with the culture of the school district. And I'm not saying that D41 is a failing school district, but there are several things on this list, and read through it, that I feel can hold true in District 41. And I picked out just a couple of similarities I wanted to point out. Number one is, the message is tightly controlled, eliminating constructive criticism. It goes on to say, anyone in the school district or in the community who dares to question the decision is accused of trying to hurt the children or attack teachers. When administrators surround themselves with yes men and strictly control the message, it makes it much more likely that mistakes are going to be made at a cost to the children and to the taxpayers. Second point, the school board members serve as rubber stamps. One of the major criticisms lodged against board members is that they have an agenda, as if that is something bad. If the agenda is to stop out of control spending or place more emphasis on education, what is wrong with that? When board members serve as rubber stamps for any administrator, they are effectively taking away local control of our school districts. Third one, the community is not involved in its schools. In many districts, the community is kept at arm's length until it's time to pass another bond issue or tax levy. And the last one, an overemphasis has been placed on technology. While it's vital that students are able to handle technology, it is just as important that they are able to participate in discussions, listen to lectures, and take notes. And if your school district is pushing the idea that everything can be learned by consulting Google, then your child is being shortchanged. And I guess my point in just pointing out some of these things is I feel like we should proceed down the road of going with caution. I know public education has changed a lot over the years, and we have to keep up with the times.
Mm-hmm.
But I worry, and I've had parents tell me this, when did public education become about getting written up in a publication and trying to sell our schools? And it just feels like the best interest of the children is always being taken into account with decisions. I know sometimes I feel like I've used the analogy, we have no foundation and we just keep slapping stories upon our house and underneath is crumbling. And my fear is by the time we realize the impact of everything we're doing, what sort of negative impact is it going to have on our students? I've talked with many community members who have older children who went through D41, as well as students enrolled now. And there's an overall feeling that the schools right now are unrecognizable from what their older children experience, and it's not better. And I feel like we keep throwing initiative after initiative with no apparent evaluation besides to say we're growing. But I would like to know how, why, from what. Can you show me a piece of evidence that shows what we're doing is better? I mean, at this point, I don't even know if we can figure all that out. We've added specialization, multi-age Spanish, PBLs. We added wind time. We already did away with wind time. We lengthened the school day. We changed our grading scale. Now we need full-day kindergarten. And through all this, I wonder if we said, is this what's best for our students? I feel like the changes are compounding our problems. Instead of stepping back and saying, let's slow down, we just keep piling more and more on. And I feel like when the gears don't fit together, we scramble for ways to make it work, which costs the taxpayers more money in the end and can negatively impact students. A lot of the things that parents said tonight, you know, lengthening the school day, we now have the cost of, we have to have supervisors that can't leave because the drop-off times conflict in the morning between the elementary and the middle school. We're hiring Spanish teachers for fourth and fifth grade to fill a gap in the schedule. We all now have an AB schedule at the elementary school, which they did away with at Hadley. But it doesn't make sense to me that we're going to that for the elementary school now. And another big concern is when we make change, I feel like we should be communicating it. We should make good decisions and not be afraid to talk about them. Like lengthening the school day. Instead, I feel like we say nothing or we wait till the 11th hour, which just creates anxiety with our customers, the parents, the teachers, the kids. And it feels like they violated our trust. And I know that's not what our intent is. We want to build trust. But some of the decisions we make do that, which my final point, I guess I'm just concerned we have too much in common with what was described in that article. And I want us to be honest with ourselves, start looking at what's going on in our schools, start listening and finding out what our teachers say, what our parents say. I know we can't go back and change the decisions that were made, but we can move forward with some purposeful decision-making. They're our kids, their minds, the communities. I know we all care about them, but they only get one shot at elementary school, and they have a few short years. I don't want to continue to run kids through a huge science experiment. I feel like as a board and an administration, we need to have courage to make decisions that we're willing to stand behind and maybe admit we've bitten off more than we can chew. Maybe we need to scale back, but we need to evaluate what's going on. And in the end, anyone who suffers from the bad decisions, I feel, is our students, then second our wallets, and that's what we should be concerned about. And I know I keep bringing up a survey, but it's important to me. I think it's an important piece to evaluate everything we've piled on, and I want to do it right. I don't want to just... I mean, I've already had parents say to me, are we going to do a survey? They better not do that same survey they did before because there wasn't PBLs in that survey, there wasn't Spanish. I want more evaluation for what's going on in the schools. And so it's just very important to me from a community standpoint to get that feedback, and that's why I keep bringing it up. The school perceptions, the proposal that came out in January 2014, it was actually completely different from what we're doing. They recommended doing a paper survey to the whole community, which we're not doing. That part of the proposal was scrapped. I feel like we are missing a portion of the community with some of the feedback that we're gathering. It actually said to survey every 3 years, which I can't even imagine doing it just every 3 years. Now it's 18 months. I think it should be every year. And I know in the spring we decided to move forward with the survey in the fall, but I'm not agreeing with that timeline. I was recommending we do it in the spring. I know someone has said, well, we agreed to do it in the fall. I did not agree to do it in the fall. I just want to make sure that if we do something in the fall, it's truly effective. I would like to see something done every year and not every 18 months, and have a proposal and a timeline and be at school perceptions or someone else. The original proposals that we saw about surveys, we didn't even move forward with. So I feel we need to maybe put a little bit more thought and planning into this and do it right and make a good investment. For all the reasons I just said, I think that is a piece that is missing. It's the culture of our district that I think is at risk, and it's an important piece we have to take seriously. So I'll get off my soapbox now. But that's it.
Thank you. Any other comments, observations?
You know, as I recall, we were told that we couldn't do a survey at the end of this past school year, and because there wasn't enough time to do that, so we pushed it forward to October. So that's why, to me, I want the October survey. Now, if it makes sense to have, and I don't remember the chap's name, but if have him come back to us and present to us, you know, and say, you know, tell us, he can tell us, he's the expert. He can tell us, you know, what we're doing, what he's recommending, what are best practices. Maybe that's something we need to do to make sure that the survey that we're going to do in October, you know, it still hits the marks.
Mm-hmm.
So, Paul, have you spoken to him recently? Is it possible that he could come back and give us a presentation?
On what? I mean,
mm-hmm. Well, I think
I'm going to need to let you guys keep talking.
I think what Stephanie is saying is, you know, we can slap together a survey in the fall here, and we can slap together some surveys internally. But what she's looking for, and again, you know, to her point, we put a lot of things together, and some may say not, you know, I don't mean to say this and sound badly, but I do that often, but we've done some things that I think are haphazard, so we don't want to do that again with the survey. We'd like a plan in place, and I think part of that plan has to be school perceptions or anybody else that you want to, that you maybe want to bring in to present, go through the community. I mean, I've listened tonight to the board members tell me that they want input from the community. Well, what better way to get input from the community than to let them sit in their homes and go ahead and grade how they think you're doing? The very own customer that pays the bills around here allowed to survey in their own homes to actually see what they think of us. You know, so I think she's looking for a comprehensive plan, something that says, hey, here's what we're doing, here's the types of things that we're looking for, here's what we're expecting of you, getting some input from him as an expert, and saying, you know, these are the timelines, this is going to be done every year, this is going to be done whatever it is. But again, I think we need to have, what she's saying is we need to have a comprehensive plan in this part of it.
Well,
I guess I feel like to date all we've said is we'll do one in the fall. We can do the old survey and add some questions, but mm-hmm. I would like.
Can we hear from Joe? You want to say something?
I concur with what Drew said to sum it up quickly, but at the end of the day, I believe we all agree that a survey should be done, a follow-up survey. I think we all use the experts, and that's exactly what Stephanie and Drew have all said. So I agree with that. I mean, none of us are survey experts. Even if we were, we would want an independent survey expert to guide us through this. For me, the one thing I don't want to lose, and I'm not saying anybody's saying this, but I don't want to lose the data we did collect mm-hmm. in the sense that when a survey is done, a follow-up survey, there's information gained if you can compare it. Right. So I don't want to lose that and not take advantage of what we did do. So I'm ready to move on to a comprehensive survey. This sounds like a perfect term of something we need. How we go about that, Paul, at the end of the day, you're going to have to determine what to present to us that meets a comprehensive survey, which I hope will include using the past data so we can compare.
Patrick?
Then we're all saying the same thing. You know, we want feedback. My thoughts are why don't Stephanie, and if you guys have ideas, why don't you lay those ideas down, the time frame, what we would want measured as a board, how we want it to be done, survey results, when we would expect them, you know, to put the plan together, bring it to the board, let's talk about it. I mean, we've talked about this survey conversation in this cloud without concrete steps in doing it. If this is something that we want to do, put a plan together, let's vet it out. It's our job to put that plan together. It's Paul's job to execute. So put the plan together. I mean, we can go around this thing 9 different ways to Sunday. Mm-hmm. Until we get a plan together with timelines and deliverables and expectations, we vet it as a board, we come to consensus, we hand that to Paul to execute.
Well, I
don't think we should have Paul try to define what we want.
Well, I guess I'm thinking in two ways. When I hear you know, this idea of I threw a survey out there. And there wasn't a plan in place. I disagree with that. You know, I, like Stephanie, I went through and I made copies of all the minutes where we talked about this, and it was back in January 2014, actually, that we looked at the history of doing surveys here in 2010, 11, and 12. We did, this online satisfaction surveys, and then we went to an internal survey. But, you know, we weren't using what I would say is the longitudinal approach. And that's why we went, that's why at the time, actually, there were four, or three rather, companies that were we did outreach to, or the administration did rather, this is their work, to come to, you know, with some presentation. School Perceptions actually is the one that the administration brought to the board, and you know, you're right. I mean, in these notes it says because it was below that threshold of contract, it didn't need formal action by the board. But certainly the board was informed. We saw the options, talked about it in the minutes on the 22nd of 2014, February 10th of 2014. So there's history here that this conversation was, you know, was going on. And for me, the key is, because I've seen a previous boards, what I would say is my language, but try and be, you know, find a less expensive way to do things, that we're not getting professional advice from a place like School Perceptions. The whole idea was to have a longitudinal data that we're starting here and we're adding to it. Now, I do agree that that there's maybe pieces you can add to it, but we talked about that, and certainly Mr. Foster from School Perceptions said that that's possible, but he also said to us, and he's an expert, we read his resume in the proposal, that if you change it, then it's garbage in, garbage out, you know? So every year we're spending X number of dollars, but we're not able to do what you're suggesting, Joe, which is to look at the psychometrics of it and see, this is normed, this is why we went to him, because it's validated, so he can give us that insight moving forward.
Yeah, I agree with that, and that's a lot of data, and I think it's the same data that we're asking our community task force to do, is to take a look at some old history of how things were done and then move forward and looking forward mm-hmm. in that direction. I agree, there's been a lot of conversations about that, but I think for us to get off this button and take the next step of, you know, if Stephanie is saying that she's hearing, you know, participants, and we've heard some tonight, you know, we want to know what more is going on, you know, put a plan together, you know, we need to look at long-term or history data that allows those tenured board members to say, okay, this is what happened and these were right, the decisions were made. Use that going forward at a 3-5 year plan. This is what the plan's going to be. We want to measure here. We want to measure here. We vet that out as a board, and we call that our survey long-term vision or whatever we want to call. But this way, it's Stephanie and Kurt have been able to put a plan together, what they think their vision is, and then as a board, we kind of flush that out, and then we're going to land on a common denominator eventually, and then we say, okay, Paul, this is what we want it executed, and that should include external parties to do the survey, internal parties to do the survey, but we're going to all flesh out the consequences of those decisions, of that long-term vision. And until that first draft is made by, and I just keep saying Kurt and Stephanie, because, I mean, it's their bullet point here, until that is the first clay is molded, then we're just going to keep going around and around until we land as a board of, okay, the survey vision of the next 3 to 5 years is this, and we agree as a board, mm-hmm. and then we say, okay, Paul, that's...
Patrick, can I nuance what you're saying? Because I want to be careful about something, and that is, and this is the question on here, is this board work or staff work,
right?
And I think it makes perfect sense to have board members... send, if there's consensus around wanting to, you know, take a look at this, to send to Paul. These are things that I think are important in terms of getting information around. So is it an application? Is it this or that? But to have board members put the plan together, that's staff work. So I'm not...
I disagree with that mm-hmm. because I think if we try to ask Paul to deliver something, then he's trying to address the wishes of what he thinks this board is asking.
No, what I'm saying is we send that data to the administration, and then based on, because a lot of this has to do with timing of the survey, what you can do with it depending on when you put it out there. I mean, that's what Bill Foster shared with us, right?
Yeah, I agree. But what I'm saying is let Kurt and Stephanie put that plan in place and say, we want this survey done on December 25th, right? And we're going to say, okay,
you know,
you don't.
For example, right? And if we put it out there, we're
yeah, but
our
we,
first step, and we're telling
right.
we want to put it out there, and Paul can come back and say, let me tell you why, or why the expert says that March 12th or the
yeah.
spring is not a good idea to do.
Why don't we do this? Why don't Stephanie and I work on just a framework, much like Erica came back with the board goals. Maybe a framework for the board to go ahead and have discussions so that we can, off that framework, give some direction to the staff. And then they at least know, so they're not, because Patrick's right about that part of it, that they're going to spin their wheels and he's going to come back. It's going to be like the discussion on you know, what to do with construction. I mean, he's going to come back and say, which way are you guys directing me? I'm not sure. So maybe we can put a framework together, then Dr. Gordon, that framework then becomes staff work, and they can, you know, talk to school perceptions and take it from there
sure.
and define that.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I would disagree with Erica about, and it's not really that big a deal, but as a clarifying point, and anything, you know, we talk about 21st century learning and change around here like crazy. Well, like that, like any of that, that the survey has to be adaptable to that change. So you're going to have things, you can't produce the same survey. You're going to have basis points and questions that are going to be common
mm-hmm.
to that to take a look at. But as things change around here, which we do a lot of, we need to evaluate that. So as Stephanie's point was, you know, FLESS was not part of that, so we, you know, need to do that. So when we come, we'll bring a framework of things that way, and,
mm-hmm.
and maybe that way the board can talk about it at some point and then
yeah.
come to consensus on some direction for staff.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think that's fair. I said I just want to make sure, well, A, I want to make sure that the work that, and this is work, right, that you're putting, if you're putting together a framework, that you're, we're also, as a board, open to have the administration say, our expertise is this. And that, and that's, again, if we're not administrators, and a framework is one thing, and I hear what you're saying, but we have to make sure that there's not an expectation that because we've said X, it's going to get followed through on.
Right.
Now, we've talked about these kind of things before, and I just want to clarify that.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I see the framework is doing what you're saying, Kurt, which is you got to have a longitudinal piece because that's what builds the identity of the survey and whether or not things are, you know,
and
better, worse, et cetera.
And I think those are the points that we will flush out once the draft is created.
Mm-hmm.
And we come up, and if the longitudinal points are there, as a board, you can say, well, what about that aspect of it?
Right.
That needs to be part of it. And it's a, to me, it's going to be draft one, draft two, draft three before we land on a model,
mm-hmm.
a forward-looking model, or a schedule, so we don't revisit this every year. And then if it's in a place where Paul feels comfortable that says, okay, I know what roadmap you want me to get there. Now
mm-hmm.
I just need to find the utility to do it. And these are the utilities, and these are going to be the cost consequences.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we say as a board, okay, what are those consequences? Are we comfortable with the financial decision of that forward vision?
Mm-hmm.
And Steph and I believe, you know, strongly enough about it that, you know, we're willing to take some time on our own to put the plan together.
Sure.
I'm
yeah.
speaking for her, but disagree with that.
Yeah. It's not unlike the rest of us. I mean, there's other stuff that we all do, we take on, so yeah. So I just want to clarify this, Paul. It sounds like the consensus of the board is surveys are critical. We have school perceptions in place and the plan is to go in October. I think that's still important. And that is part of the plan, so we do have a plan and that's part of the plan. And I think to not do that would restart this whole, you know, thing again in terms of not having validity.
We are saying maybe we're going to, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, that's what I was getting to, that, you know, there's some voices I've heard tonight, Drew being one, and I forget if Jill concurred as well, and mine too, that, you know, you talk about losing time on things. I won't lose time on this. You know, we've got an expertise in play school perceptions, very well known, and don't necessarily want to lose that. Agree that looking forward and figuring out the framework and those other pieces, what else do we need to be serving, and what, you know, demographics and that type of thing are important. But is there what's your understanding at this point?
I just don't know how
we're going
to do that in a month or so. I mean, for us to come up with a framework and then hash it out as a board and then give that to staff and say that we're going to have a survey in October, to me, that's unrealistic. I mean, I think, and I use the term half-assed. I mean, why? You know, at this point, nothing that we survey is going to change anything for this school year. So whether we do it now or we did it in March, it's not going to change. We're not going to change anything this year that we're doing. Mm-hmm. So to me, again, let's try and take a step back. Let's create a framework. Let's talk about this as a board. And let's, you know, create some consensus that way. Give direction to staff. Let them take some time to go ahead and get this done right so that we don't do something, you know, again, that I perceive is not really, you know, being comprehensive. I just don't think. And again, you mentioned yourself, and I'm not going to speak, but you said Drew and Joe. I don't know what the first convene at all. You know, it's, you know, to see
sure.
There's a consensus. But.
Mm-hmm.
Just to, before doing it, if you don't mind, just one thing. You know, on this October versus the spring day, who's going to pick the one thing? I mean, none of us are experts. You know, maybe having it in the spring is perfect. Maybe having it in October actually allows you to get the survey data back and digesting it through January so you can make changes from the following year. I mean, all that makes sense when I say it, but I'm not an expert, so I don't want to rely on it. What I know is we have an expert that we hired in the past, School of Perception, Phil Foster, and you heard from him. What I don't want to lose, and this is in response to Kurt here, what I don't want to lose, and this is similar to what Erica said, is that time, if October is a good time. So I think we would have failed if we didn't reach out to him and make certain that this doesn't matter. And if that speeds up, perhaps you're working out a framework and we can somehow help and guide you guys to go through that in a special board meeting, then by all means, let's do it so that we don't lose what we may lose because of time.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I want.
Thank you.
And he did advise to do it. I mean, you guys did do the last one in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
So can't imagine the spring.
But maybe there's a reason to do it.
If it was, then why didn't we do it in the spring?
That's but maybe the second set of data being in the fall is helpful, and I don't want to make an assumption. And that's the danger.
Okay,
no, and that's the danger here is to make the assumption because you did it in the spring once. The second one should be in the spring. Okay. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to miss asking the question.
Thank you, Drew. Dean. Dean, and then Stephanie. And
I
then
think we started this discussion 32 minutes ago. I think that we talked about this in the fall and that we still need to do October because we told everybody we were going to do October.
Mm-hmm.
So we told the community we were going to do October, and if we don't now, it will look like there's some kind of a problem or they will start some other discussion on that. So I think we need to go ahead with October. I don't think there's anything wrong with coming up with a long-range plan on surveys.
Mm-hmm.
But we already said, matter of fact, we were being pushed to do it in the spring, and when we went to the expert, they said, here's when you should probably do it. If we wanted to have the longitudinal data that we talked about, we should do it in October. So we can do that. We can also do the next part, which is to talk about what the long range is. But I don't think we should not survey in October after we told everybody we were going to survey in October.
Yeah. I don't think they're mutually exclusive, in other words. I think this is good work, and I think that is that commitment that we've made as a district to do this.
But the thing about, I guess, you know, I mean, I will survey too, don't get me wrong, but I guess I'm a little more hung up on, I want to do it right. I don't, even though, you know, it's less than $10,000, I just want to make sure we do it right. And the fact of the matter is, maybe I'm wrong, but the reason that we're doing a survey in the fall is because I was pushing for it. And I'm now the one saying, you know, I was the one that brought it forward to the board in the spring. I don't recall it was ever a discussion item. There was never a timeline or a plan. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
You are wrong.
Yeah.
There was an 18-month.
There was an 18-month plan. It had already
when
been committed
we first
committed
did
to.
It, there was an 18-month plan. I just.
But the proposal from School Perception says 3 years.
That was the very first one.
When we brought it to the
in
board,
2014,
said 18 months.
Yeah.
So that's the continuation of what we said.
And no one says we shouldn't buy that,
but
we did communicate it. So
yeah.
I mean, that's key.
Yeah.
From my perspective.
But I guess why, when I brought it forward, then was it the answer wasn't, oh, we have an 18-month timeline. It was, we went to school perceptions, and they said, we don't have time to do it now. We should wait and do it in the fall.
I think we were reacting to your question to see if we could do it earlier. But even at that time, maybe we didn't communicate it very well in that meeting, but we did commit to doing an 18-month one. And we looked to see if we could do it sooner based on your request.
Can I?
I mean, maybe would it be worth, could we set up, like, a conference call with Bill Foster, with...
Well, why don't we turn
myself trying to do it quickly and maybe just answer some of these questions and then.
Why don't we turn? Why don't we weigh in on this?
Is, I think it's a good idea. We hash it out at the board level so we're not back and forth and doing this stuff. And you bring it to the board, say, do you want it annually? Do you want it every 18 months? What are those pieces you want to survey on? Give us those pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I think the plan is a good plan. Bring forward exactly what the board wants for us to do. We will then reach out. We will get everything done for you. And if you want it in the late fall, if you want it in early winter, those are all those pieces that we can ask Bill Foster to say yes or no.
Yeah.
I would respectfully disagree. Let's don't do two surveys this year on the same thing. Mm-hmm. I just think that's going to be somewhat odd. Mm-hmm. Let's do one survey. But let's make sure the board, it's exactly what the board wants,
mm-hmm.
and that we have it annually. And it has all these different pieces to it. So I would strongly support the idea that you guys bring back that thinking for the board. Let the board do whatever the board does with it, and then gives administration the recommendation to move forward so we can get forward as we sit here today. Does that work?
Yep.
I'm fine with that.
Yep. All right, so I see consensus.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And that school perceptions is still our go-to expert
on
this, right?
I think, and I agree with what Kurt said, but you still have to have those questions, and that's their question bank,
right.
So we can have some longitudinal data.
Right.
And there's no reason to believe that they've done a fantastic job for us.
Okay. Thank you. Very much. Thanks, everybody. All right. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Alter?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Boczynski?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
No.
Mrs. No.
Yes. The board anticipates on taking action when it returns from closed session. Okay, welcome back. Thank you for waiting. After lengthy, as you are aware, conversations around our closed session discussion, which has to do with the authorization of the extension of Dr. Gordon's contract, I will read the motion and then describe the extension material. Make a motion to accept the resolution authorizing extension of the July 1st, 2013 through June 30th, 2016 performance-based superintendent's contract between the Board of Education and Dr. Paul Gordon. In the resolution, there are three items. The first is that the board hereby finds that the superintendent, Dr. Paul Gordon, has met the goals of the current contract, July 1, 2013 through July 30, 2016, the performance-based superintendent's contract between Dr. Gordon and the board, and that the board is therefore authorized by law to extend the term of the contract. Item 2, the board hereby approves and authorizes the president and secretary to sign an amendment to the contract substantially in the form of the attached Exhibit A, which I will review in a moment, extending the term of the contract through June 30th, 2019, and approving new goals. This resolution shall be in full force and effect upon its adoption, adopted this 25th day of August 2015 by roll call vote. Let me, before I get a second, review again Exhibit A. This is the amendment to the July 1st, 2013 through June 30th, 2016 performance-based superintendent's contract between the Board of Education and Dr. Paul Gordon. The Board of Education of Glen Ellyn School District 41, DuPage County, Illinois, the board, and Dr. Paul Gordon, the superintendent, hereby agree to amend the July 1st, 2013 through June 30, 2016 performance-based superintendent's contract between the board and the superintendent as follows. The term of the contract as provided for in paragraph 1 is hereby extended through June 30th, 2019. The goals provided for in Exhibit A, which I will review in a moment, are hereby superseded by the goals contained in Exhibit 1, which is the new contract, and the dates for refined and additional goals as provided for in paragraph 1 of the contract are changed to October 31st, 2015 and December 15th, 2015 respectively, meaning that the goals will be refined by Dr. Gordon in further conversations by the 31st of October, and then the board will also respond by the middle of December, December 15th, with regard to those for approval. The superintendent's base salary for the 2015-2016 contract year, as previously approved by the board on April 27, 2015, is $216,918. Item 4, in all other respects, the contract shall continue in full force and effect in its present form. This amendment shall become effective and be deemed dated when the last parties of the parties sign as set forth. Exhibit 1, the new goals, are actually have been identified by the board, who sent to me after a discussion areas of common interest in goals, and they fall into five categories. The first one is academics, learning, and programs, and essentially it's to create a new set of district academic goals to define academic metrics annually to be met over a 3- and 5-year period, academic progress measured with data, test scores, as well as surveys of teachers, students, parents, et cetera. Updates will be quarterly to the board and an increased opportunity for collaboration. The second is facilities, to revise and create a District 41 short-term and long-term facility plan. Solution to continue to move District 41 forward, develop and present to the board a response to the Community Facility Task Force findings in the 2015-16 school year. So again, all of this will be delineated further between Paul and the board in terms of dates, et cetera. The third area for goals are finances. Develop a plan to look at ways to start reducing the budget as it relates to the state of Illinois economic conditions and potential ramifications to the district, while supporting key programs and curriculum for increasing academic achievement and closing achievement gaps. We provided an example, including potentially a 5-year reduction in the overall budget over the next 2 years. Again, just an example of wanting Paul to look at a percent, and again, using a 5-year projection period. So it's an example. We're not saying it needs to be that, but it's looking at some type of reduction plan. Fourth item is district culture climate. Use the annual HCI survey, staff culture and climate survey, to better understand each of the schools in the district's overall culture. This was to identify where changes needed and then implement a plan based on each of the schools, and then report that out to the board along with the community survey to address culture and climate. And the last one is community engagement and communication. Build on the current comprehensive community engagement plan with a focus on outreach to community members who do not have children currently attending District 41 schools. Use the community survey to identify interest, increase active participation. Erica Krabiel, in reporting to Paul, has put together an annual communication plan, and so we want that to be a part of Paul's overall goals and also be met with some, again, more specific statistics. So these goals are actually, there's more of them in this contract, and there's an expectation on the board's part that they'll be focused much more discreetly in terms of percents and metrics, focused on greater accountability with his staff and then up to the board. So those are the goals. So I've made a motion, or may I have a motion, based on what I just said, which was lengthy.
Motion.
And a second?
Second.
Okay.
You're recording?
Yeah. And,
you, no, I was asking. I wasn't telling.
We're recording it anyway. Right. Yeah. And discussion. Well, I will start and give an overview. This was a very lengthy discussion, obviously. There is recognition that our contract extension is always a long conversation. Tonight in particular, the board, I will give credit, had detailed conversation, lots of questions of each other, I think it's fair to say, and also wanting to look at the long term of the district based on changes coming up, which include currently Bob Cicerella's position being open, but also in 2017 our assistant superintendent for teaching, learning, and accountability retiring, and also board changes in 2017 and also 2019 in terms of elections. So I want to commend the board. It was a long and challenging conversation, but that's what we do, and it was, I think, worthwhile in the end in terms of our next steps. So.
Mm-hmm.
Roll call.
Any comments? Any discussion?
I would just like to make some comments before we take roll call.
Sure.
I have some concerns with this, so I'd like to make them public. I think I have a different perspective from some of my fellow board members. I was asking for we haven't truly evaluated the work that's been going on in the district since the spring of 2014, which was just the beginning of Dr. Gordon's first year. And I feel, just based on feedback that I've received, that we need some further evaluation, follow-up surveys, which we're working on, before we do a long-term contract extension. I know some of my fellow board members would like to believe that it's just me and about five people in town that actually have concerns with what's going on in the district. And, I was elected. I put out there what I represented, and I don't believe that that's the case. But we have no survey or anything to prove one way or the other. But I can't extend the contract for 3 years when we're missing a critical piece of information. And I feel that this district is trying to move forward, and I know the existing board, plus myself and Kirk, because we weren't on the board, has tasked the superintendent with saying, we're going to go to referendum. That's not me saying that, but that was in the goals.
In the original ones, yeah. Where that were then changed.
And I know that,
changed.
Recently in the paper we talked about building a new school, and I'm just really concerned if we're looking to get support. The decisions that the board is making, this is about four decisions, the decisions that the board is making, we are elected to represent the community. And I've tried to express to this board that we need to take into account the community when we're making our long-term decisions. And I don't feel that's been done in this instance. I think there were other solutions that we could have moved forward with that would have done that and would have been a compromise. And we're not doing this in this instance. And I think the board has hurt itself in what this is going to, how this is going to reflect to the community. And it's a big concern. It's a big concern for me.
Thank you.
I too on the goals portion, number two, I know one I don't believe was met, but we've been going to semantics about them being changed. Number two, I do not believe was met, measurable goals and math tests. There was the comprehensive review of the long range plan, which ironically was brought up tonight, that we were going to review that. So that wasn't done prior to tonight. I echo the sentiments of Stephanie. We represent the community. We were elected to represent the people that voted for us. So, and they have concerns. They have concerns the way that the district is heading, the direction of the district, and so therefore we can't. I can't support what just occurred.
I would just like to clarify that the board is going to referendum. I'm not saying that that's going to happen or I support that, but that's a word that has been thrown around by incumbent board members.
Right. Well, and to clarify, the goals that Kurt is referring to are goals that are required on the contract because it's a performance-based contract, so it's a multi-year contract. And the first goal, as we talked about, is the fact that when this contract was made in 2013, when Dr. Gordon was first hired, that board was talking about a facilities plan that would require a referendum, and so in fact that was built into the goal. But by October of 2014, that had changed through the Finance Committee, which then determined the approach to self-fund the removal of portable classrooms. And so the goal was shifted, and Paul was then charged with moving forward based on the Finance Committee's direction. So that's some of the change, but thank you. Any other comments?
I'd just like to say I do support the superintendent, and I feel that he's put us on a good path and moving the district forward. I would like to see further matrix that justify the growth and the improvements that are required. In all of good conscience, I cannot support a 3 year. I was comfortable with three. I was comfortable with one. I don't want this to be an indication that I'm not supporting Paul and the things he's done. You have my support. But I'm sorry that I can't support the 3 years.
Thank you, Drew.
It's a representation of the community. I mean, it's the Virgin community with divergent views. We're not going to agree on everything. That's a good thing about Glen Ellyn. But we move forward with the decision. Mm-hmm. And I've heard positive things with Paul and his leadership. So that's why in the conversation that we had, I'm comfortable where we're landing.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to base my vote, of course, probably mainly on the work that I've done with Paul over the last 2 years and watching him respond to different things that have come up and been roadblocks, sometimes emergencies. As I reflect back to when we did his review in the spring, we had consensus that he was doing a good job, which is why we went forward with that action then. And to me, this gives us a stability that is lacking in the district that we need. We need to send this message so that they know this is the leadership and here's the direction that we're going.
I concur with some of Drew's statements that he has confidence in Paul, and I certainly have confidence in Paul. And Dean's summary of his position is very close to mine. We worked closely with Paul since we got on the board 2+ years ago, and each of his reviews have been outstanding, and he has shown the leadership abilities that warrant him leading us into the future. So I'm comfortable with it. Presentation and the motion as it is
okay.
Stated.
And I'll follow up with a final statement. I also, having worked with Paul for the last 2.5 years, and in fact was on the board when Paul was hired, and that was a unanimous vote. In fact, out of the three candidates that we interviewed, the second interviews on site, Paul's candidacy was the only one that had full support of the board. The other two were splits. And so from that moment to where we are now, with all that Paul walked in to navigate, lead, I believe he's done an excellent job. And I believe that moving forward, he is very clear and very conscious of the expectations of this board, which, as Patrick said, are divergent in some cases. But is willing to, and Paul has shown that, work really hard to bring to the board what we want, what we expect, and that the level of accountability, as we've said and as Stephanie has said, is higher, and there'll be greater due diligence around that. And so I think, having you confirmed for 3 years in addition gives us that time as a district to adjust, embed, go deeper in what we're doing, and make sure that teachers and staff know that their leadership has their back, which I believe you do. All right. Roll call, please. Anything else?
There you go.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. I thought Dean was going to do it, but go ahead. No, you can do it.
Escalante?
Yes.
Clark?
No.
Belger?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes.
Ellis?
No.
Buchholz?
No.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Motion passes 4-3. I want to thank everybody for staying, and I want to thank the board. I know this was a long meeting, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Paul.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we've got to close the meeting.
We have to close the meeting.
I make a motion to close the August 24th, August 25th meeting.
Second.
Mr. Pachinski, Mr. Ellis, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.